Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Board of Directors regular meeting. It is April 19th. Most of you don't know, but it is Paul Revere Day. So with that, I have no opening comments, so would you call the roll, Marcy?
On the roll for the Board of Directors meeting of April 19th, 2017, Director Abe Koga, Director Barrett.
Here.
Director Canepa.
Here.
Director Chavez.
Here.
Director Cutter. Director Joya.
Here.
Director Groom.
Present.
Director Haggerty. Director Kaplan. Director Kim. Director Miley. Director Mitchaw. Director Ju. Director Ronan. Director Ross. Director Sanchez. Director Sheehy. Director Sinks. Director Sparing. Director Wagenknecht. Director Zane. Secretary Rice.
Here.
Vice Chair Hudson.
Here.
Chair Nyss.
Here.
Did I miss anyone? We have a quorum.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I've asked Katie Rice if she would be willing to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Here we go. There we go.
She said only if you all stand with her.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks, Katie.
You're so welcome.
So we now have public comment on non-agenda items. Marcy, do we have any cards?
I have one card for this item.
Okay, so if you would call that person, and they have 3 minutes.
Brianne Riley.
Good morning.
Great. Thank you. Good morning. I'm Brianne Riley from Bay Planning Coalition, and I just wanted to make a quick announcement about our upcoming event. It's our big annual event, the Spring Summit, which will be held on Thursday, May 11th, at the Oakland Scottish Rite Center. It's a full-day event featuring multiple panels and speakers on all things related to planning in the Bay Area and the related policy areas that we work on. The panel topics this year will be navigating regulatory uncertainty, short and long-term risks to the Bay Area, so a discussion about things like earthquakes and sea level rise and their practical impacts, and also the conversation about where we begin considering all of this that's happening. I'd invite all of you to attend. We have a $90 government rate, which should make it doable, and we are happy to answer any questions. I'll be here the rest of the meeting, and I have some flyers for the event as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And now, under commendations and proclamations, we are going to recognize Hearing Board Chair Terry Trumbull and Hearing Board Member Julio. Oh, my Spanish is failing me this morning.
Magaliz.
Thank you.
Magaliz.
Magaliz, thank you so much. And thanking them for their service, leadership, and dedication to protecting air quality in the Bay Area. I know that Terry is here. Terry, where are you? There's Terry. And Julio, are you also here?
He was unable to make it.
Okay. So, Terry.
You mean I get rebuttaled?
Yes. You definitely do.
I'm very appreciative that you're holding this celebration for firing me. We have term limits on hearing board members for 15 years, and Julia and I joined. And major reason that you want us to move on is to equalize the distribution of board members. As of our last hearing yesterday, three out of the five of us are from Palo Alto, dual influenced by the chair. But to wax serious, we have a very interesting job. Some of you are new, so let me belabor it, which is we're one of the few spots where there's an independent board. You guys make the rules, but where the judges and the appeal from us is straight to the court system. And Julio is a PhD meteorologist who's been absolutely wonderful on our board, and that's probably about all we need to say. It's a delightful job to hold, to be independent, and we get treated like you guys, where you get to watch construction out your window while you're working. So anything else?
Yeah.
But my recollection is you've served 12 years, am I correct?
15. And two before that on the advisory council.
No, and we really owe you a debt of gratitude. That's a long time. Our hearing board really does, they really do enforce what we do. And I think it's incredibly important. Terry has a long career in law. I have been involved with things that Terry has done through the Lung Association, so I know that his commitment to clean air is very real. So I am going to come down. Does anyone else want to say a word about Terry before I go down?
Madam Chair.
I do.
Yes, Jack.
On behalf of the staff, we also wanted to be able to thank Mr. Trumbull, but I know Brian specifically wanted to have some heartfelt.
Yeah, he said it was going to be really rotten to me.
Yeah. While we have Terry standing up here, and since you know, I have to be a little bit more respectful in the hearing board room, so we're in a different environment. But let me just say, Terry, as mentioned, is an attorney. He's been a member of the hearing board since 2002 and the chair for the past 3 years. Those years on the hearing board, as I think some of you will recall, has been a period of rebuilding the reputation of the hearing board. And I think Terry can justifiably take some significant credit for that. You know, as both a member and chair of the hearing board, Terry has always been extremely thoughtful, insightful, and fair in all of the issues that he's handled before the hearing board. My staff and I have really appreciated the efforts that you've made, Terry. But, you know, Terry's dedication to environmental protection and air quality didn't begin with his appointment to the hearing board in 2002. He also, as he said, was a member of our advisory council for a couple of years, starting in 2000, where he chaired the planning committee. And fortunate as we are to have had that service, Terry's involvement with air quality and environmental protection in general goes back quite a lot further than that. He was a staff attorney at the Department of Interior in 1970. In 1972, he moved over to the then newly created EPA under its first administrator, William Ruckelshaus, and began the task of developing air and water quality regulations. During that time, Terry wrote an article that was published in the Ecology Law Journal at Berkeley on stationary source air pollution control. That article still circulates within the district, and one of my staff attorneys recounts that when he started here in the mid-80s, he was provided a copy of that article as background on the work that we do. Terry also has a long tenure as a teacher in the Bay Area. He has taught at San Jose State, at UC Santa Cruz, Menlo College MBA program, and at the Mineta Transportation Institute, where he speaks about environmental law and public policy, as well as transportation issues, I believe. He's also served on the LAFCO in Santa Clara County and the Santa Clara County Planning Commission. So, again, fortunate as we are to have had Terry here, it's only the latest in a long string of public service. And from the bottom of my heart and my staff's heart, I really want to thank you, Terry, for your efforts on our behalf.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Excuse me. Sorry. A couple of our members want to say something to you, Terry. So, Brad. I'm sorry, Mark.
That's okay. I'd rather be Brad. I aspire to be Brad sometimes. Terry, thank you very much for your astute and deft stewardship of the hearing board. It's the particular matters that you handle are very important to the district, and as Brian had said, restoring the credibility and the status of the hearing board has been achieved under your stewardship, and I appreciate it, and so does, I think, everybody up here. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, anyone else?
Yeah, I would.
Just start talking because it's hard to tell who's waving.
So, Terry, I really, I know you. I was amazed to hear that story of your work early in your career. I didn't know that about you. I know you as a passionate advocate for doing the right thing and for environmental causes in your work with the League of Conservation Voters of Santa Clara County. You've been very helpful to me and very thoughtful about how to approach environmental issues. I know that you continue to teach politics and the environment at San Jose State. And
well, that's because you're coming to speak to us on Monday.
I'm coming to your class again next Monday, but I want you to know, I mean, for example, the passion that you've induced in students includes having them weigh in on why community choice energy might be a good thing and examining the issue critically. And so that was actually foundational work that led to creation of Silicon Valley Clean Energy. And your educating the next generation, I think, is in addition to the legacy here, another that you're leaving for the community in the Bay Area. And I deeply appreciate your service.
Thanks very much. Was the next one Margaret Abicoca?
I just wanted to say.
Not her.
I walked in and I had this smiley face with my name on it on Terry's card. So I just, wherever I go, when it has to do with environmental protection or sustainability, there's Terry Trumbull. And I've had the opportunity to work with Terry on some other boards and have always looked at you as an advisor. And I appreciate all of your leadership and all that you've done. And I've had a chance to speak in your class too. And appreciate that you are training or educating or guiding the future as well in terms of the environment. So thank you for all you do. I'm just disappointed that I just joined this board and I won't be able to work with you in this capacity, but I know I'm going to see you around. So thank you for all your service.
Thanks, Margaret. And
what's his name?
Yeah, Vice Chair Dave.
So Terry, we're going to test your memory. You came on in 2002. Who was the Air District Chair?
Air District Chair at that point? Well, that's a great question, but the odds are it was Scott because he gets to do it about every 3 years.
Memory still works.
Okay, with that, I am going to come down so that we can present the commendation to you and also do a photo op or two.
So while Liz is coming down, I do want to say one comment that I've regularly made to executive committee, which is everybody in the Bay Area needs to appreciate you. I haven't yet to find a local elected official who can tell me their work on regional bodies has gotten them a single vote back in their homes. And so your dedication to doing this, given you're doing it because it's the right thing, is really appreciated. Thank you.
Nice job. So here is your
commendation. Can I go in the center so we can have a better backdrop?
Sure.
Okay. Should I take this out?
Yeah, take it out.
Should I drop it?
No, you should not drop
it. Should I break it?
No, you should not.
Can we break it or drop it?
Well, here's the good news. I heard that Terry can come back in 3 years. So, Terry, just keep us in mind. Okay, with that, we move on to the consent calendar. There's items 4 to 10. Is there any question about that? And if not, I would like a motion. Thank you. And a second. And Do we need a roll call on this, Marcy? Okay. Okay, is there any dissent on the consent calendar? Okay, that moves us on to our reports from our committees, and we are going to start with Stationery Source and
Great.
John Gioia, who recently has visited Palo Alto,
yes.
where he couldn't find an electric charging station.
No, nope, they were all full. We need more EV infrastructure in Palo Alto.
Right.
Just all those EV electric cars there. And to save time, I am going to do item agenda 11 and 18, which are the two Stationery Source meetings, rather than come back, so I'll just read them both. The committee met on March 20th and approved the minutes of January 30th, 2017. The committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, Milpitas San Jose Waste Facilities Update. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, Spare the Air, Cool the Climate, a Blueprint for Clean Air and Climate Protection in the Bay Area. And I'll read now the minutes, so we can, I guess, take one motion on both. The committee also met on April 17th and approved the minutes of March 20th. The committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, update on draft regulation 11, rule 18, reduction of risk from air toxic emissions of existing facilities. Finally, the committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, update on Reg 6, particulate matter rule development. The next meeting, May 15th, I'm not sure if that actually is, we do not. So those are the minutes for the March 20th and the April 17th, and I will move those reports.
Madam Chair, you actually have a couple of speakers comment.
Okay.
Public comment.
At least on the floor, I'll move the reports.
Okay. Is there
a second?
I'll second.
Good. Okay. And before we actually vote, let's hear from our speakers. Marcy? Two speakers on the Stationery Source or not?
Okay, so for item 11, I have Stephen Yang and Devin Richards, and then for...
We're just on 11 now, so you can... Unless there's another way.
My motion was on both minutes at the same time.
Item 18,
sorry,
which is also Stationery Source, I have Bob Brown.
Okay, so if those three people will come to the mic. Thank you. And you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Good morning, Board of Directors. My name is Stephen Yang with Chevron. I'm concerned about the Clean Air's plan's goals to reduce greenhouse gases locally and the pursuit of direct regulation of local greenhouse gases. The effectiveness of any greenhouse gas emissions policy or regulation needs to be evaluated based on total global greenhouse gases, not the Bay Area or the state. After all, climate change is due to global greenhouse gases, is it not? But the Clean Air Plan fails to do this. While it may reduce regional greenhouse gases, it risks increasing global greenhouse gases through leakage, making climate change worse. For example, what happens if a proposed regulation shifts the production of goods and services further away from the point of consumption? Less local greenhouse gases, but more global greenhouse gases. CARB understood this when they implemented and passed cap and trade, which had measures to minimize leakage. Your advisory council understood this and has also advised you on this. If you're looking to achieve reductions in the Bay Area, and to merely achieve the state's greenhouse gas goals and win those political points, then by all means continue with direct localized regulation. If you're looking to actually mitigate climate change and make a difference, please ask your staff to reframe the district's plan's goals in terms of a net global greenhouse gas reduction and to ensure proposed control measures are evaluated against this metric. For criteria pollutants, you might say that as long as the pollution in the Bay Area is reduced but is increased elsewhere, it's okay because air quality is good here and the Bay Area is our jurisdiction. However, with greenhouse gases, if the emissions are reduced here but increased elsewhere, climate change is still here and gets worse. Climate change and greenhouse gases are fundamentally different than other pollutants. It requires a different approach, most notably incentivizing voluntary lifestyle change. Thank you.
So I think your item, your comment may have been directed to item number 20.
Right.
Instead of to the stationary source. So if the other two comments are really directed at number 20, which is our climate plan,
right.
Why don't you speak to us on 20 at that time?
Right. While we discuss this plan at the committee, it's on for approval as item 20.
Okay.
Yeah.
I apologize.
Okay. No problem.
No, not at all.
It's just that we discussed it
right.
at stationary.
But is the other, are you the next speaker? It, is yours also on climate plan, really?
On the stationary.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Good morning, Madam Chairman and members of the board. My name is Devin Richards, and I'm a policy analyst for CEEB, the California Council for Environmental and Economic Balance. I'm here today to ask all board members to read closely the letter from Richard Corey to form your own opinion about what it says. CEEB does not believe that it is a support letter for Rule 1216. In particular, I call out the language that says, quote, with regard to the district's draft regulation 12, Rule 16, limiting emission increases from refineries, and the new concept in regulation 13, Rule 1, establishing a carbon intensity cap for refineries, we agree that both approaches could help to ensure that these sources do not add to the state's overall emissions of greenhouse gases and criteria and toxic pollutants, end quote. Importantly, it calls for the creation of an industrial source action committee that, quote, would be tasked with performing a rigorous engineering evaluation to identify measures to further cut emissions of all pollutants from refineries, end quote. The point here is that while ARB thinks 1216 and 13.1 could help to prevent additional emission reductions, real reductions will come through the work of an industrial source action committee. Thank you.
And just so my colleagues know, that letter was not discussed and on the agenda for stationary source.
Thanks, John.
Okay.
Did we have one more speaker? And again, are you really speaking to item number 20, or is this to the stationary?
As it was addressed at the stationary source committee on Rule 1118, yes. So
okay.
I'll be brief.
Yeah.
My name is Bob Brown. I represent the Western States Petroleum Association, and I'd just like to acknowledge the many hardworking men and women of the refineries that we represent. Could you all stand or raise your hands? We got Shell, Chevron, Valero, Tesoro, Phillips 66. We outlined in technical detail our concerns with Rule 1118, but I wanted to speak to that in our letters on the record in December. 1118 would have far-reaching impacts on hospitals, schools, data centers, manufacturers, and small businesses, totaling more than 1,000 Bay Area facilities, which underscores the importance of having a sound process to consider facts and science behind these risk thresholds in a reasonable time frame. The district recognizes that 1118 is the most stringent, more stringent than most other air programs being implemented in California to address toxic emissions, but it fails to explain or justify the basis for regulating so much more stringently at 10 parts per million to develop a risk reduction plan. The average Bay Area risk from exposure to toxic air contaminants has been reduced by 83%. And over the last few decades, TAC emissions from stationary sources in the Bay Area have decreased 87%. And I think the board here in the district has a lot to be proud of in those reductions, as does the regulated community. But there must be a balance of authority to control air pollution, and the district acknowledges air quality has improved dramatically. Balance that with the necessity of this rule. This rule should take into account the additional reductions that will occur as WISPA members implement the additional controls imposed over the past year through the district's refinery strategy. A risk reduction threshold for risk of 25 per million was reported to the board initially on July 20th, 2016, and later removed from consideration without any analysis or justification. The district needs to assess the feasibility and cost effectiveness of 25 per million threshold, which is already a significant move and consistent with South Coast, along with the incremental costs and benefits of going from 25 to 10, and actually we're at 100 now and going to 10 if this rule gets through. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And that takes us back now to our agenda, and we need to vote on on number, we're voting on number 11 and number 18. Mm-hmm. And
Madam Chair,
yes.
would you like to have the staff, I can give the full board a little bit of a sense on where we're headed relative to 1118, just real briefly.
That would be very helpful. Thank you.
Given Mr. Brown's comments here to you. So the Stationary Source Committee had a very comprehensive discussion about this proposal. We had originally been targeting July to bring this to you. I think, though, based on the comments received, and also, again, we're still in the middle of the public comment period, but it might, I think, make some sense to have some examples be brought back to the Stationary Source Committee. Director Joya, this is something we talked about on Monday. And so that being the case, it might make more sense for us to bring this proposal to you at the September board meeting. And therefore, we can use the summer to work through not only with the affected industries, but also the affected public facilities as well, not the least of which include some of the wastewater operations in the Bay Area and others. And so, Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention that to you because there will be some time, I think, to work through some of the issues that you're hearing about today relative to 1118.
Good. Thanks very much. And John, thank you, because I know you've been shepherding this, and I appreciate that. So now, unless we need a roll call, was there a comment? Scott, sorry.
Thank you. I'm on 11A. You know, I'm still somewhat troubled by this. And I realize it's just more than the Newby Island waste facility that creates the problem for both Milpitas and Southern Fremont. But I feel it's important for me to raise this again. I'm somewhat frustrated that, as I understand it, as the Air District, we really have no, as I understand it, and Brian, you can correct me, or Jack, but we really have no jurisdiction over this of sorts, over the landfill. And as I understand it, the San Jose City Council has voted to expand this, not in width, but in height. I guess creating a new mountain down in southern, or I guess in the southern part of the Bay Area. And, you know, these problems are going to come on us because, as we know, the odor problems continue to persist down in southern Alameda County and, I guess, northern Santa Clara County, I guess, for lack of a better term. So I just feel compelled to put this on the record that, you know, the Air District is now stuck, or going to be stuck, with a bunch of odor complaints, as we already are. And I don't know what to do, because here we are. We're the enforcer of the air, and we're allowing this to happen. And I almost feel like we're doing nothing, and I almost feel like we're not doing our job. So what can we do? Because this did happen on our watch.
Right.
But I realize we're constrained. But I feel like there should be, there's no discussion here. And I realize we heard it in committee, but there's no discussion here at the board meeting. And again, we're just letting it happen.
Director Haggerty, I can assure you we share your concerns relative to the situation down in the South Bay there. And you're right, we don't have local land use authority. That's something that we get pretty much constantly reminded of. In terms of the landfill itself, they are required to be permitted. They're actually a Title V facility, meaning that they're a federal facility. They're required to comply with a whole set of requirements, not the least of which include the collection of their gases. And I think the board needs to continue to hear about this through the Stationary Source Committee is what I would recommend. And we need to monitor it, only because if you take a look at the state's 8032 scoping plan, it calls for even more and greater diversion of organic wastes. And so we personally believe that the... Right.
The organic waste is really what's creating the order.
Agreed.
That's really, I should have been a little bit more concise.
No, I know.
But and I should let you finish. I apologize. But the organic waste is really what's causing the odor, mm-hmm. and that is what we've been told we really don't have jurisdiction over. I wasn't saying we need land use jurisdiction. For my colleagues, I don't want to take your land use jurisdiction. Jack, I didn't really
say that. I know you. I think also the frustration we have is relative to the composting operations, there's actually state law that prohibits us from issuing nuisance violations on those operations. And that's unfortunately something the composting industry got in, 10 years ago, Brian? So
yeah, around that time.
It's a situation I would recommend that the board continue to hear about, and because we are working with a number of groups down there relative to their odor management plan. So, Brian?
Thank you, Jack. The only thing I would add to that, Director Haggerty, I think this is going to be a problem that isn't unique to Newby Island, but as the state pushes more organic waste into these recycling programs and composting programs, we're going to find ourselves with this issue anywhere there are neighbors near landfill facilities. And so that's a land use question, but this prohibition on us handling it as an odor nuisance presents a bit of an issue. And so we're trying to be creative in working with CalRecycle and the local enforcement agency to take a larger enforcement role. So even if we couldn't necessarily use our own tools, we can use our staff to assist them to do their job. And so that's one of the models we're looking at as a possibility here. Just to let you know, we're not doing nothing about it. We're trying to use our resources to assist those who do have the authority.
I guess the only thing I would say is I hope that the Air District continues to be diligent in the enforcement of the odor in that area. And just because we don't have jurisdiction over the composting facility, that we continue to look at all the sources of odor in that area, because it's not just an Alameda County issue. Right. It is a Santa Clara issue too.
Right. And that's fully understood, and that's exactly what we're working toward.
Yes. I mean, it's happening all over the Bay Area, as you said, and we are aggressively going after the parts of those facilities that we do have jurisdiction over. So it's difficult to differentiate the odor from the composting versus the other operations, but we can, and we have, and we're going to take some pretty aggressive action on those things as far as permit conditions, that sort of thing. And as Brian had said, we're working with CalRecycle to help them, because they don't have the staffing levels that we have, so to try and help them enforce what they have to enforce too, using our investigations.
So, Director Sinks.
I also want to respond and weigh in that I agree that this deserves continued attention from the Air District. I've toured the facility. I've talked to folks in Milpitas. This is a frequent topic of discussion there and concern. I will note, if you look in our report, I think even in this packet, the Air District has issued a numbers of notices of violation. It's not simply the composting that we don't have jurisdiction over that causes the problems. It is the solid waste treatment facility and how the sludge is aired out. It's ZWED. There are a whole number of facilities in this general area that are causing problems, and even the bay itself, when water is low, creates a lot of odor. So I actually appreciate the diligence that staff has put into creating enforcement and actually helping debug the problem in this area. You got to understand that there are various sources, and but I would appreciate continued work on this. I know, for example, the Air District has required vaulting in the landfill of the sludge coming out of the wastewater treatment plant, and has made other improvements there. But yeah, it's an ongoing battle that'll require continued diligence, for what it's worth.
Yeah, and
but it's certainly of concern to us in Santa Clara County as well.
Yeah, and I would say that I think I did acknowledge that there are other sources down there that are also creating the problem.
Yeah. But yes, if we could figure out how to handle the landfill, the composting, that would help.
And this has been an issue we've been looking at for quite some time, because I think you first toured that rod maybe a year ago.
Yeah, a year and a half maybe.
Yeah, it has been a while. Anyone else want to comment on this? And if not, I think we are ready to vote on this. And you said no roll call, Marcy? Okay. Anyone who is not in favor? Okay, let's go on to the next one, which is a report from Carol Groom on our fiscal situation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Budget and Finance Committee met on Wednesday, March 22. We approved the minutes of February 22, 2017. We reviewed and discussed the discussion of the proposed budget for fiscal year ending 2018. The committee also reviewed and discussed the staff presentation on proposed amendments to Regulation 3, which is regarding fees. The next meeting of the Budget and Finance Committee will be held on April 26, 2017, 9:30 a.m. in this building. And that concludes the report.
Good. And would you like to move that forward?
We don't need to.
Good. In that case, then, we move on to Climate Protection Committee. And Director Barrett has said that Director Sinks will actually give this report.
Yeah, in Director Barrett's absence, I was chairing the meeting. And the Climate Protection Committee met on Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017, and approved the minutes of November 17, 2016. We received and discussed the presentation Fossil Free Bay Area, given by SPUR, San Francisco Planning and Urban Research. Finally, the committee received and discussed the staff presentation Local District Local Support for Local Government Climate Protection Activities. The next meeting of the committee is Thursday, May 18th, 2017 at 9:30 a.m. at this location. And this concludes the report of the Vice Chair of the Climate Protection Committee.
Thank you, Director Sinks. And we're now going to cover 14, 15, and 16, and each of these do require they require action, whereas the previous ones did not. Mm-hmm. Previous one did not. So we're going on to number 14, which is mobile source, and Director Mischoff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The committee met on Thursday, March 23rd, 2017, and approved the minutes of February 23rd, 2017. The committee reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, projects with proposed grant awards over $100,000. The committee recommends the following to the board. Number one, approve Carl Moyer program projects with proposed grant awards over $100,000 as shown in attachment one, and authorize the Executive Officer, Air Pollution Control Officer, to enter into agreements with applicants for the recommended projects. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, lower emission school bus program update and funding allocation, and the committee recommends the following to the board. Allocate $5 million in mobile source incentive funds for lower emission school bus programs, and to authorize our executive officer to enter into the into the agreements with the applicants for that program. The committee then reviewed and discussed the staff presentation, fiscal year ending 2018, Transportation Fund for Clean Air Funding Allocation. The following recommendations are made to the board. Allocate $13.93 million in new Transportation Fund for Clean Air monies to the programs listed in Table 1. Authorize the proposed cost effectiveness limits for the Air District-sponsored programs listed in Table 2. And authorize our executive officer to enter into the funding agreements and contracts up to $100,000 for the projects and programs listed in Table 1. Finally, the committee chair requested that the item update on efforts to further reduce emissions at the Port of Oakland and former Oakland Army Base be tabled until the next committee meeting. That has now been, just for the edification of the board and our audience, continued further to our May meeting. The next meeting of the Mobile Source Committee will be held on Thursday, May 25th at our offices here, and I move that the board approve the Mobile Source Committee's recommendation. This concludes our report.
Okay. Are there any questions on this report? And if not, would you indicate you support it by aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Madam Chair, you have a, you do have a public comment on this item.
On the one that we just passed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mark Roost.
Thank you, Mr. Roost.
Oh, okay, that one. Sorry. I'm just supporting the allocation of mobile source incentive funds for a low-emission school bus program. I'm with Green Fleets Group and with Breathe California, Bay Area, and Health Trust, we converted a full-size Bluebird school bus from diesel to battery electric a few years ago and want to do a lot more. So we're all for that.
Good. Thank you very much. The next report on personnel, and I understand Katie Rice is going to do this instead of Director Sparing.
Yes. On Friday, March 24th, the Personnel Committee met, and we have first approved the minutes of the April 11th, 2016 meeting. Then we reviewed, interviewed, and discussed seven candidates to fill four vacancies on the Air District's hearing board. We interviewed for two principal and two alternate members in the public category. So the committee and staff discussed the recruitment process. We interviewed each candidate. The committee recommends that the board approve the following. One, the appointment of Barbara Toole O'Neill as the public category principal. Two, the appointment of James Ralph as public category principal. Three, the appointment of Jen Tan as public category alternate. And fourth, the appointment of Barbara Kohler as public category alternate. And I can say that we had, 27, 30, how many total applications for these positions, and staff screened down to a total of seven, and they were all fine candidates, and it was a tough selection process. So the next meeting of this committee will be at the call of the chair, and today would ask that the board approve the personnel committee recommendations.
Okay, and if there are any comments on this? If not, would you vote aye or nay? Ayes?
Aye.
Okay, thanks very much. And I would echo what Katie said. These were really good candidates. It was hard to, I think it was hard to decide because they had such different skills, but each brought something unique and very important for us as a board. So on to the Ledge Committee, and that's Rag Wagon Connect.
Thank you. I have my special Ledge Committee glasses on. The Ledge Committee met on Thursday, March 30th.
Are those rose-colored?
That's how it is. On Thursday, March 30th, 2017, and postponed the approval of the minutes of December 12th, 2016, for lack of a quorum. The committee discussed the consideration of new bills, and a consensus of the members present supported the following positions for the Air District: AB 193, Cervantes, oppose unless amended; AB 378, Garcia, support; AB 1014, Cooper, support if amended; AB 1132, Garcia, support; AB 1274, O'Donnell, support in concept; AB 1647, Marasucci, support if amended; SB 4, Mendoza, support if amended; SB 41, Galagini, oppose; SB 49, De Leon, support if amended; SB 174, Lara, support; SB 563, Lara, support; and potential bill currently without an author or a number, initiated by California Against Waste regarding composting. This is going back to what Mr. Haggerty was talking about, composting as an essential public service for the Air District permitting consideration. We were opposed to that. The next meeting of the committee is at the call of the chair. I move the board approve the positions of these bills, and that concludes my report.
Thank you. A second to that? Okay. Is there any discussion on this? This is pretty extensive. Okay. If not, would you vote aye or nay?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, and that passes. Thanks very much, Brad. That's a long list.
Yeah.
So, yes, nice glasses, we might add. We think you might have borrowed them.
They're my dollar glasses.
Yes. So with that, we're on to the last. This is our last committee report, and this is on the advisory council meeting. And are you going to do that, Rod? Okay, Director Six.
Yes. You know that Stan Hayes is our chair, and I'm the ex officio member, and in that capacity, I'm reporting out. So the advisory council met on Monday, April 3rd, 2017. Council Chairperson Stan Hayes requested approval of the minutes of February 6, 2017 be postponed until the next advisory council meeting. The council then received the staff presentation, Regulation 11, Rule 18, Reduction of Risk from Air Toxic Emissions at Existing Facilities, Regulation 12, Rule 16, Petroleum Refining Facility-Wide Operation Emissions Limits, and Regulation 13, Rule 1, Refinery Carbon Intensity Cap. Next, the council received the staff presentation, Advisory Council Next Area of Focus. Finally, the council deliberated on its next area of focus, including air quality impacts in Bay Area communities and associated challenges for the Air District. And the committee was enthusiastic about looking at care communities and impacted communities as a next area of focus. The next meeting of the council will be held on Monday, July 24th, 2017 at 10 a.m. at this location. This includes the chair's report of the advisory council.
Thank you very much, and we do not need to vote on that one. So that ends committee reports.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. We do have two comment cards
on
for this item.
Okay. Have them come right up.
Okay. Glenn Turner and Sean Lee.
This is on the advisory council, correct?
Thank you for hearing me. I was concerned that I thought we would be having extensive discussions of this, the Rule 1118, 1216, and Rule 13.1. And I'm concerned that there seems to be a continuous delay in discussion of these points. And I just wanted to remind you, and perhaps you delayed this discussion because of the California Air Quality, the Air Board of California has come up and spoken out to say that refinery caps would not be in conflict with carbon trading or any of the other things already in place, as we have been told in the past. So. But I'm just sort of surprised that this wasn't under discussion today, and that the information of what was happening on the agenda here did not seem to be available sooner. I would have thought that would have happened. So I just wanted to hope that this isn't continually delayed, but I'm glad there'll be public hearings.
There will be, and Director Joya said he would like to make
a
comment.
Yeah, as the chair stationary source, all of those, just to be clear, all of those rules have had extensive presentation discussion at committee meetings, this board meeting. They're still on track to come before the board in May. I think we're going to hear in the executive direct officer's report some comments about the letter from the California Air Resources Board, but that nothing has been delayed or slowed down. There, in fact, Jack, in your executive officer's report, I think you can clarify the dates. Everything is going forward. There's a CEQA process going forward. There's a public comment period. There's volumes and volumes of material from reports. We'll get an update, but it's just the item's not on our agenda at every meeting. So the draft rule is out, and it's all scheduled to come after the public comment period back to this board later in May.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, John. Greetings.
Good morning. My name is Sean Lee. I'm the Health, Environment, and Safety Manager at the Chevron Richmond Refinery. I urge the board to review the socioeconomic analysis for proposed Rule 1216. The socioeconomic analysis is inadequate in representing the impacts to the refineries and supply chain disruptions for transportation products. The analysis should have utilized expertise from the oil industry to be realistic. The analysis looked at two scenarios. The first scenario was installing a wet scrubber on the FCC to reduce PM and SO2 emissions. This is not a realistic scenario for operating in 1216 in all cases. The scenario cannot be applied to all the refineries in the Bay Area. Also, this is not where refineries would have its economic impacts. The second scenario evaluates the impact of limiting refinery production to maintain compliance with the cap. The analysis does not take into account compliance margins refineries need to ensure compliance, as well as the impacts of AB 32 in the next 3 years of LCFS and cap and trade. There should be more scenarios to evaluate this rule. Please redo the economic analysis before going forward with 1216. Use inputs that are realistic with the oil industry to do your studies. Thank you.
Thank you. And do we have one more person on that, Marcy? Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. In that case, then we are going to move on to the rest of the meeting unless there are any comments on our committee reports. And that takes us to our public hearing, which is to get testimony on the proposed amendments to Air District Regulation 3 fees. And Mr. Broadbent, do you have a presentation?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the board. this public hearing is the first of two hearings that will be held on our proposed changes to our fee rules. This is an effort and an exercise we go through every year. The fees indeed support the activities of the district, and so they come along simultaneously with our budget. Ms. Pam Leong, an engineering manager who's been in charge of this effort for us, is going to be giving you this presentation here today. And so let me hand it over to Pam.
Good morning, Chair Nis and members of the board. My name is Pamela Leong. I'm a manager in the engineering division. And today I'll be giving the first of two presentations on the proposed amendments to Regulation 3 for fees. On today's agenda, we'll be discussing the cost recovery background and its relationship to fees. I'll propose the draft fee amendments. We'll review the public comments received and end with the rule development schedule. This chart shows the district's fee revenue sources. The majority of the fee revenues come from permitting and compliance programs. The next largest portion comes from property tax revenues. The district is allowed to recover 100% of its costs for running the regulatory programs. Cost recovery is calculated by dividing fee revenues divided by the costs to run these regulatory programs. In March of 2012, the Board of Directors adopted a cost recovery policy. Let's see. The goal is to amend the fees to recover 85% of, to reach a 85% cost recovery goal. The cost recovery policy provides different cost recovery methods. The first one I'd like to cover are to propose amendments to specific fee schedules to be based on cost recovery analysis done at the fee schedule level. Therefore, we would adopt larger increases for schedules with larger gaps. Another one would be to adopt regulatory, with new regulatory adoptions, we would include fees to recover the cost for the implementation. Excuse me. This next slide shows the trends in cost recovery since 2011. Excuse me. So we've been steadily increasing fees by an average of 6.4% per year to reach the 85% cost recovery goal set by the board. However, our costs have been increasing as well. The costs are primarily driven by increases in staffing. The cost recovery gap is filled by county tax revenue. This graph shows our expenditures since the same time period, 2011. Personnel costs are the primary contributor to our expenditures and one of the primary ways we have controlled costs and handled the economic downturn was by not filling vacancies. So in fiscal year end 2015, we were down to 317 positions. Since then, we have started filling vacancies to support our new programs and regulations. So personnel expenditures have increased. And this explains the flattening of the cost recovery that you had seen on the previous slide. The cost recovery policy provided the method to increase fee schedules based on the cost recovery of the individual schedules themselves. So, for example, for fee schedules where we realize or project a 95 to 100% cost recovery, we propose to increase fees by 2.7%, which is equivalent to the consumer price index for the Bay Area. On the last row, we can see that if we are projecting cost recovery of less than 75%, we are going to propose a 9% increase in that fee schedule. We are proposing new fees to recover costs for new draft regulation 1118. This proposed rule ensures that toxic air contaminants from existing facilities do not pose unacceptable health risks to people nearby. So this rule will require health risk analysis to be done by air district staff, and it will also require submittal of risk reduction plans that will require review and approval by staff. Approximately 1,100 facilities will be impacted by this rule, and the fees would only become effective once Regulation 1118 is adopted by the board. So the proposed fees for the facility-wide health risk assessments will range from $499 to a maximum of $150,000 based on the number of sources at the facility. This will be a one-time charge. The proposed fees for the risk reduction plans will range from $1,500 to a maximum of $32,000 per facility based on the number of sources required to reduce risk. And this is also a one-time fee. Again, these fees are only effective upon board adoption of Reg 1118. There are some other proposed amendments to the fee regulation. For Schedule A, we're proposing to add diesel particulate matter to a list of toxic air contaminants that are subject to the excess emission fees. To Schedule H, we propose calculating the fees based on gross throughput of organic solvent. To Schedule N, we'll be updating the slope factor or the multiplying factor to recover costs and the higher ARB fees for AB 2588. We propose to help recover costs to run multiple health risk assessments in excess of three scenarios per permit application. We propose to delete fees for duplicate copies of permits to operate and registrations. And we'll change all Regulation 3 references of health risk screening analyses to health risk assessments. The next three slides will show you the impact of the proposed fee amendments on businesses. So this is the impact for the small businesses. And you can see that for a typical 10 multi-product nozzle gas station, the proposed increase would be $263 a year for a total of $3,600 to renew their permit to operate. And on the low end, the fee for a backup generator, the proposed increase would be $2 a year for a total fee of $332 to renew the permit to operate. Impacts on the larger facilities are dependent upon the number and types of sources at the facility and the emissions at the facility. So this table shows the percentage increase in permit fees over the last few years for the five refineries. And it also shows the current permit fees in millions of dollars in the last column. So they pay from anywhere from $1.5 million to $3.6 million in permit renewal fees. We're proposing increases between 13 to 15% for this year. And you can see the increases have been more significant these more recent years due to the new regulations. This slide shows the impacts on another type of large facility, the power plants. So they're currently paying renewal fees between $222,000 to $459,000 per year, and we project their increases to be about 3.5% this year. The proposed regulation, or the proposed amendments to Regulation 3, were workshopped on February 27th. Written comments were due on March 15th, and this time period was extended until March 29th. Sieb and Valero commented that they wanted more information on the cost and fee estimates for the proposed regulation Rule 1118. We have since posted the draft staff report, and this covers the details on the 1118 cost and estimates. They also requested more information on cost assessment and cost containment efforts. So this year we will be hiring a consultant to update the cost recovery and cost containment report. Sieb also asked whether the 15% cap or state limit on annual permit fee increases applies to Regulation 1118. And the answer is 15% does not apply to new fees for new regulations. The American Petroleum and Convenience Store Association, or the gas stations, requested justification for the increase in Schedule D, which they are subject to. So currently, we're predicting a 75 to 85% cost recovery for Schedule D. So we are proposing a 8% increase in this fee schedule to recover costs.
Can I have a quick question? I think just to point out, because this came out in our presentation to Stationary Source, the gas stations that are impacted here are not the small gas stations, correct? These are gas stations, 10 multi-product gasoline nozzles or more. So I want you to clarify, just to clarify that.
I think you're conflating two. The 1118 regulation applies only to right. The Baker gas stations. This applies to all of them across the board, so...
But this particular fee increase, it says here, 10 multi-product gasoline nozzles.
Yeah, that's about an average size station.
10, okay. 10. So the Costco ones would be much large.
Much larger, yes.
Got it, okay. That's right, 10 nozzles would be about five different pumps. Okay, got it.
Could I jump on that? So that fee is for 10, and then how is it extrapolated upward?
So there's a multiplier, and it would increase. The more nozzles they have and the more throughput of gasoline, the costs would increase.
Okay, thank you.
Continue.
Okay, for the rest of the rule development schedule, let's see. As I mentioned before, we had a workshop on February 22nd. Written comments were due March 15th, and this time period was extended to March 29th. On March 22nd, a briefing was given to the Budget and Finance Committee. Today, we're having the first public hearing to receive testimony. And the second hearing to consider adoption by the Board of Directors is scheduled for June 21st. And if adopted, the proposed amendments go into effect on July 1st. Thank you.
Okay. Public comment is open. I'm sorry, public hearing. Any questions of staff before we hear from the speakers?
I do. Thank you. Going back to your chart of the fees, looking at a generator, the amount being $332, do we actually go out and test this generator?
In terms of source testing, is it?
Yeah, I mean, so we're charging a fee. What is that fee for?
That's the fees for the emissions from the generator itself. So they are permitted. We charge them fees based on the emissions from that generator. And then there are permit requirements. So our inspectors go and check and make sure that that generator is operated within compliance with that permit. And dependent on the facility, we do source tests from time to time.
Okay, so we're actually physically going out and testing this.
Not every single one, as you can well imagine. That's thousands and thousands, but we do at random pick ones for testing.
Okay, well, I'm trying to put into, as you're saying, it's increasing our cost to actually monitor this. So
yes.
If we're not actually going out and testing them, how are we?
There's inspection processes that happen. So while we don't test, we look at the engine. We understand that each engine has basically an executive order from the California Air Resources Board that governs the amount of emissions it can put out there. Our inspectors then go out and check those generators, each of them, to make sure they're in compliance with their operations. Our engineering division looks at how they're permitted and limits them so that they can only emit within a limited parameter that complies with state law, state air toxic control measure, essentially. So the fees are for our engineering costs and our inspection costs to make sure that we continue the monitoring of those generators.
If I can, Director Cutter, typically a backup generator, you'll find them all over, as you know. They're going to have an engine hour meter on them, and that's what we use because they're oftentimes limited to 30 hours, I believe, a year. And for the most part, they are fairly dirty because there's no controls that have been installed on these types of engines for the most part. And so that's one, why they're regulated. And two, that's also why they're limited in terms of hours. So,
right. I mean, I have no problem with that. The consequences, we just went through this with my engineering department in our city, and the cost to recover fees for things that perhaps will be done and maybe not done completely, it just seems like we're... I just want to make sure that we're actually charging a fee for something we're doing.
So no, it's a very good point. And I wanted to reiterate something that Ms. Leong mentioned is, for example, on the toxics rule, 1118, the fees would only become effective if the board adopts that rule. So we would not implement the 1118 fees schedules at all when and until the board actually adopts 1118, which, as I indicated earlier, it may get moved from July over to September just to allow us more time to work with affected facilities.
Okay, the public hearing is open. We will not be voting on anything today. It will be continued to a second hearing June 21st. We have one public comment card. If there's anyone else that wishes to speak, please give a card to the clerk. Who is the first person, Marcy? Our only person.
I have Mark Roost for this item.
Yes.
Mark Roost with Green Fleets Group and Seaway Battery and DesignEarth.net. Emphatically want to support toxic air contaminant emissions from existing facilities being ensured that they don't pose a problem to people. We should do risk reduction plans on that. On 19, Schedule A, hearing board fees revisions to include diesel exhaust particulate matter in the schedule of toxic air contaminants. I strongly support that. And besides the conversion capability, and I'm working on plans for large-scale conversion business, we also have the batteries are going to be able to replace diesel cost effectively and And in terms of the capacity, to, you know, the physical capacity to put the batteries into the vehicle and get the distance you need, probably within 3 years. So it's, and besides the improvements from Stanford and from Tesla in batteries, there's other improvements that are going to go beyond even what they're doing. And then on the backup generator, I noticed that you said 365 horsepower engine, that'd be about 274 kilowatts, I think. That adds up to about 5.5 hours. If you translate that into kilowatt hours. Anyway, what I'm looking at is that instead of that you ought to charge more for diesels and inspect rigorously and push them to switch to batteries. For right now, the battery cost is probably a little higher, but at $100 a kilowatt hour, which is where it's headed by 2019, it'll be cost effective. They'll be able to get 5.5 kilowatt hours out of a generator. No, it was 150. Okay, so let's just dropping in the numbers from since I'm scrambling that. The basic idea is that they'll be able to provide the same amount of power as the generator for 5.5 hours on batteries that'll cost the same amount. That's what I was trying to work out. And so that should be true by 2019. And not only from us, but from Tesla and others. So it's really worth aggressively pushing off of use of diesel in all regards, including in backup generators, especially since you said they're dirty.
Thank you. Without any further public comment cards, I'll ask for comments from the Budget and Finance Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I want to assure the members of the public here, as well as new board members, that the Budget and Finance Committee meeting for the past 4 or 5 years has really had rigorous discussions about the fairness of fees, the effectiveness of fees, the safety regarding how fees are in for companies that we are assessing fees. We have been tried to be very, very careful about not harming small business, but at the same time making sure that their properties are safe and well tested and well inspected. And as new rules have come along, we have kind of gone backwards and then rethought and then added additional fees. But again, always trying to have safety at number one, fairness and effectiveness in our fees. And we will continue to do that as we continue to follow our cost reduction policy.
Thank you. Member Sperry.
At our next public hearing, can you give us another column that describes the task that you do for this increased fees? So we have an understanding of what you're charging a fee for. This is what we're doing, so we can make that relationship.
Will do.
Okay. Thank you. With that, go ahead, Mr. Ross.
Just a thought on these backup generators. If they used biodiesel, would that be a help, or would we incentivize them by charging a lower permit for a biodiesel?
The issue is the combustion and the creation of PM 2.5. Mm-hmm. So depending on the fuel, actual biodiesel can create more nitrogen oxides and in certain cases can have equivalent PM 2.5. So it doesn't Never help mind. A lot. It may help, but it doesn't help a lot.
Never mind. Thank you. And I'm firmly opposed to raising the fees on board members speaking.
Okay. Without further comments, we will continue this item to a second public hearing, June 21st, 2017. And we'll move on to item 20, a public hearing to receive testimony on considering certifying the final environmental impact report and adopting proposed 2017 Clean Air Plan. Henry, yes. You're up.
If I could just start off, Vice Chair.
Henry, you're not
Hudson.
Up.
Good morning, Vice Chair Hudson and members of the board. This morning, we are pleased to bring to you today our 2017 Clean Air Plan, which is entitled Spare the Air, Cool the Climate. And this title expresses the dual focus of this plan to focus on our two interrelated goals, which is helping to clean the air in this region and helping to do our part to protect the Earth's climate. It's a really bold and visionary plan. It's the first of its kind in the nation. It demonstrates the Bay Area Air District's leadership in these areas and shows that we can indeed work to clean the air, improve public health, and do our part for the Earth to have a healthier planet. Staff has worked really hard on this plan, and part of that work has been collaborating with stakeholders and other public agencies to make sure that this is the best plan that it can be. We believe that this collaboration has made it stronger, bolder, and broader. And we hope that that collaboration can continue, assuming the board approves the plan, as we implement this plan over the next several years. So Henry Hilken is our Director of Planning and Climate Protection, and he has been leading this effort. He will give the staff presentation and present the staff's recommendations.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Hilken.
Thank you, Gene. Good morning, Vice Chair Hudson, members of the board. It's truly an honor to present the Clean Air Plan to you this morning. As Gene said, I want to go through a presentation to brief you on the plan that we're proposing for your adoption. At the end of my remarks, before we open it up, we'd like to show you a short video that we've prepared, a new video that we've prepared to help in our public outreach campaign. And then, of course, we'll proceed with the with your discussion and with the hearing. So this plan, as Gene said, and as we've talked to you about in the past, addresses two fundamental challenges. Reducing greenhouse gases to achieve long-term climate stabilization goals, and to continue to reduce air pollution emissions to continue the progress that we've seen over the years to assure that we have clean air every day in all of our Bay Area communities. So this plan is our response to those two challenges. We believe it really is a bold response. We're launching a very important new phase of our work on air pollution and climate planning protection here in the Bay Area. And so we really are committed to implementing the measures in this plan. This sets a very ambitious and aggressive schedule for us. And it also outlines things for others to do. We cannot do this on our own. It will require collaboration and cooperation from the business community, from community groups and organizations, from the educational community, from individuals. So the collaboration of all aspects of our society really are going to be important as we roll forward implementing this plan. And we do hold ourselves accountable. We fully expect to implement this plan. It will not be a plan that sits on a shelf. We have very ambitious plans to implement the measures here, and we plan to report back to you to give you assurance that we're keeping up with that. So we propose to come back to the Board of Directors regularly and report on our implementation progress. So as we've told you in the past, this plan is an update to our 2010 Clean Air Plan. It presents a control strategy of 85 different measures to reduce ozone or smog, to reduce fine particulate matter, to reduce air toxics, and to reduce greenhouse gases. And so this multi-pollutant approach we did for the first time back in 2010, we're really doubling down on that this time, and that's really one of the unique aspects that Jean was highlighting in her introduction. I want to point out that we have, for the greenhouse gases, we have two long-range goals in the plan for 2030 and 2050. These mirror the state of California's goals for greenhouse gas reduction. The 2050 goal you have already adopted in your 2013 climate protection resolution. The 2030 goal, again, consistent with the state's goal in SB 32, you have not, as a board, formally adopted that goal yet. If you do approve the plan today, that is part of the findings that you would be approving today as part of your decision. And so in addition to that sort of near-term control strategy to reduce pollution, to reduce greenhouse gases, there is a longer-range vision for the Bay Area. What would the Bay Area look like over the long term? In 2050, if we are to achieve those greenhouse gas, climate protection, and health goals. And so that's another unique aspect that Jean was teeing up in her introduction. This is very uncommon for an air quality plan to go beyond that sort of pragmatic near-term control strategy and paint a more aspirational vision for long-term objectives for us. So before I describe that vision, just to illustrate it a little bit, I show this chart for a couple of reasons. It sort of this documents or illustrates some of the progress that we've seen in the past because of the air quality improvement through our programs. The blue bars represent health conditions in 1990, the orange colored bar in 2015. for certain key health outcomes, premature mortality, hospital admissions for air pollution-related illnesses, and ER visits for asthma. And so I think there are a couple takeaways that I'd want to point out here. Significant progress, very dramatic progress. These are tangible benefits to public health in the region from our program. So this is something we can take pride in, and it shows that what we do really, really does make a difference in the lives of the population here in the Bay Area. Secondly, I think it shows us there's reason for optimism. We have made great progress in our work over the past 25 years, and we present a very bold vision for the future, but I think this can give us some confidence that we can achieve that vision. To illustrate those two challenges, I have a couple charts, and I have shown these to the board in the past. This map shows our care communities. These purple areas represent the communities that we have identified through our care program as being disproportionately affected by air pollution. Certainly, conditions in every one of these communities has gotten better, as I illustrated in that previous slide, but we still have work to do. And so the vision essentially would want to make all those purple areas become clear, that when we present this at some future date, there would be no purple areas with disproportionate air pollution impacts. With respect to greenhouse gases, this is another chart the board has seen before. This is a projection of the Bay Area's greenhouse gas inventory for the various economic sectors. You can see the sectors are listed there at the bottom. The red color is transportation, that sort of teal color are stationary sources, the energy sector, and so forth. Our goals and the state's goals are expressed in terms of in reference to 1990. So the 2020 goal in AB 32 is to achieve 1990 levels by 2020. The 2030 goal, 40% below 1990, and the long-term 2050 goal, 80% below 1990. Those are represented by that dashed line there. And you can see we have a lot of work to do. This chart reflects programs that are in place today and reasonably expected programs here in the Bay Area, our rules and our programs, but also the very, very critically important state programs that the State Air Resources Board and other state agencies have adopted. So the PAVLI vehicle standards, the renewable portfolio standard, the low carbon fuel standard, many of these key state initiatives that we're familiar with are reflected in this chart. So very important reductions. That line doesn't go up. I mean, we are seeing the emissions projected to decrease, but we clearly have a lot of work left to do. And that's the purpose of our plan. And I'm sure the Air Resources Board would say similar things about their scoping plan. They similarly need to achieve reductions statewide to meet those long-term goals. So this chart sort of illustrates our per capita greenhouse gas emissions as opposed to other countries. We're that the green bar. You can see the United States and Canada to the left, other developed and developing nations to the right. And we wanted to include this just to illustrate a couple things. We are, in and of ourselves here in the Bay Area, we are a significant source of emissions. We are a large economy, just this region in and of itself. We have an impact on global emissions. We are the metropolitan area with the greatest purchasing power. One of the things that we've done as part of this plan is prepared a consumption-based inventory. We've talked to the Board of Directors a little bit about the consumption-based inventory that shows all the greenhouse gas emissions embedded in the goods and services that we consume here in the Bay Area, regardless of where they're produced. And so this chart illustrates that we can, there are significant benefits that we can accrue through reducing our own personal emissions here in the Bay Area, but certainly the leadership that we provide to the rest of the country and the rest of the world is as important, if not more important, than what we do here in the Bay Area. Our own reductions are very, very important, but as that percolates out to the rest of the state, then the country and the world, we really hope and expect that those benefits will be magnified.
Can I just ask a quick question on that last slide?
Certainly, of course.
So the Bay Area produces more greenhouse gases than China and Mexico, than the entire country?
I'm sorry, these are per capita emissions. Oh, certainly, okay. No, the total emissions okay. would be much less than those.
Okay,
I'm sorry,
I should have
been clear.
Per capita, okay.
Per
thank
capita,
you.
Sorry, yeah. So the vision. What would the Bay Area need to look like in 2050 to meet these ambitious goals? Well, our power supply would need to be nearly 100% renewable. Our buildings would need to be fossil free, no fossil fuels to heat and power our buildings. Our transportation fleet would need to be powered by electricity or renewables. And the vehicle miles traveled would have to be reduced. So clean technology to power our vehicles, but much less VMT, more transit use, walking and cycling. We see the oil industry transitioning their portfolio more to renewable standard production to satisfy the demand for more renewables in our buildings and our vehicles. And the organic, we have to get the reduce our waste, get the organics out of our waste stream, and put the organic material to productive use. And the vision is discussed further in Chapter 1 of the plan. So how does this plan start us on that path? The control strategy, as I said, are the 85 measures that sort of are over the next 5 years or so, the early steps that we will take to, on that path to achieve that long-range vision. We use all the tools in our toolbox. You can see some of the early priorities, reducing all pollutants, all the pollutants from all the sectors that we either regulate or can influence through our programs, emphasizing super GHGs like methane. There are very, we think there are opportunities there for early reductions in a very powerful, potent greenhouse gas. At the same time, we work on more challenging efforts to reduce fossil fuel combustion that are needed to reduce our carbon dioxide emissions. So this slide, I'm not going to spend much time on this, but the point here is just to illustrate, give the board a sense of where some of these measures lie. You can see in the different economic sectors, we've organized our control measures around the same economic sectors that the Air Resources Board is using in the scoping plan. And so you can sort of see the sectors for which we have proposed control measures. And then the lower bulleted list is just to give you a sense of the types of mechanisms and tools that we propose to use in implementing these measures. So rule development, our regulatory authority, is certainly a very important part of our implementation strategy, but grants and incentives, working with cities and counties, and the other type of work that we do that's not regulatory is certainly a major part of these of the control strategy. So to give you a little idea, I have a couple slides that sort of illustrate some of our early implementation ideas. What are some of the early things we'll be doing right out of the gate? This is a chart that we have shown you previously, and we presented to the Stationary Source Committee at their previous meeting. This is our rule development schedule for the next 2 years, and it combines both source-specific regulations at refineries and other large sources that the board, I think, is familiar with, and we've reported to you quite a bit, and then other rules that are really not on a individual source, but that really would address many, if not all, of the sources we regulate. So, for instance, this morning we talked about 1118, that would set standards for significantly reducing risk from existing sources. That applies to all of our permitted sources. I won't go through this list. I can come back during the Q&A, but this is our rule development calendar for the next 2 years, and it's a combination of air pollution and greenhouse gas rules that we will be bringing to the board. Another major area of focus is going to be working with cities and counties. That has long been a very important area of focus for us and will continue to be both in our air pollution programs and on our climate programs. So a couple things that we're going to be working on immediately upon the board's approval would be a grant program that we've discussed with the Budget and Finance Committee. It's in the budget that we'll be bringing to you shortly. We're proposing a $4.5 million grant program to support innovative local programs to address greenhouse gases. We also will be implementing the Technology Implementation Office that we've reported to you to stimulate innovative technologies, especially in the mobile source sector. We've talked a lot about community choice energy. Members of the board have really shown an interest in community choice energy. We think there's still a role. There's been great progress, has been made in many counties. We think there is still a role for us to support the existing CCEs to make them as effective as possible and to support the counties that may not have adopted a CCE quite yet. So we have a meeting with the CCEs next week to meet with them on how we can work together to expand these throughout the Bay Area. A lot of work with the cities and counties on model ordinances, guidance, best practices, tools. Your local staff do not have the expertise and the bandwidth to implement all these measures. So we are committed to working with them, providing tools. One of the things that we've talked to you about is a model ordinance for solar PV on new construction, and that's a project we're working on with BARC, the Bay Area Regional Collaborative, and the California Energy Commission. We hope to get a model ordinance from the CEC any day now, perhaps later this week, and be able to make some progress on that model ordinance. A last area of implementation that I would highlight is transportation. It's the largest single source of greenhouse gases and air pollution in the Bay Area. So we will not achieve those long-range targets without significant reductions in the transportation sector. It's as simple as that. So we will continue our grant programs. I think the board is well aware that we have a very good history of supporting electric vehicles, electric vehicle charging. We will continue that in the future through the CHARGE program to support, again, electric vehicles and charging facilities. Similarly, our grant programs are very aggressive in reducing diesel exhaust, and that has health benefits and, as black carbon as a climate forcer, also has climate benefits. So here, this bullet sort of speaks to some of our past grants. In the future, we see roughly $20 million or more per year for continued diesel reduction projects through our grants and incentive programs. And then certainly working with MTC and ABAG on Plan Bay Area. Later this summer, MTC and ABAG will be bringing the update to Plan Bay Area to their governing board. And very, very important, we fully stand behind Plan Bay Area and will be working with ABAG and MTC to make it a success and support those land use and transportation strategies that are outlined in Plan Bay Area. We will continue our funding programs to support those programs at the local level, and all the other sorts of work that we do with the cities to support their climate action plans, their local risk reduction plans, any local initiatives to address air pollution and climate will continue to be a major focus for us, particularly in that transportation sector. So where does this get us? This chart illustrates a little bit some of the outcomes from the plan. The column tons reduced shows you the millions of tons of GHGs reduced per year and the tons per day of ozone precursors and fine particulate matter. The middle column translates that to the health savings. We used an EPA model called BenMap that allows us to take increments of air pollution improvement and what that would mean for health improvement, and then we can monetize that. And so this is an estimate that of the health and economic benefits of the emission reductions from these measures. And then, of course, a common metric we often see is what does that mean for how many cars? What's sort of the equivalent number of cars to take off the road? It's sort of just a more commonly understood by the layperson way to represent this. These are very conservative estimates. I want to tell you that for a lot of the measures in the plan, we have not quantified emission reductions, so this is certainly an underestimate, but they are very significant, those numbers, and there are important intangible benefits as well, really from the leadership that we can present and provide. I think it really makes a difference here in the Bay Area and in other regions. I can tell you, I think we first presented this to you at your January retreat. We had just released this plan back in January when we first showed this to you at your retreat. The new administration had just been inaugurated. And I can tell you, at a lot of the meetings we've had, there have been a lot of questions. There's been a lot of anxiety out there. And what we have heard back from the public and conversations we've had at our meeting is a very profound sense of appreciation and hope that a plan like this can provide people in a very uncertain time at the federal level. We really see this as a community plan. We have talked to hundreds of people, experts and lay people, as we develop this plan, our sister agencies, partner agencies at the local level and at the regional level, and we will continue to work with our partner agencies, cities and counties, the public, interest groups. Again, we do not expect to solve these challenges on our own. It will take collaboration with really all members of our society to implement this plan and make it a success. Since we released this plan, as I said, in early January, we've received a lot of comments. And we, in an appendix to your board packet, we have provided the full comments. If you choose to see them in their from the original author. That's in Appendix C, I believe. Appendix B is a summary table that provides a summary of the comments we have received and staff's responses to each of those comments. And these bullets give you some of the high-level summaries of the comments. There was a lot of enthusiasm, support. We wish you could do more, and we wish you could do it faster. That was a very common theme. Attaboy, do it as fast as you can and do more. A lot of detailed comments, sort of turning the dials a little bit on individual measures. Here's ideas on how you could make them stronger or faster. A common comment we got from the business community is, please, don't just go off on your own. Make sure that the work that you're doing is in concert with the state and with other regions. So since we presented this in response to comments from the public and feedback that we've got in direction from the Board of Directors, this illustrates some of the significant changes, revisions that we have made to the plan. We have included that $4.5 million grant program for climate that I've mentioned is now reflected here, as is the Technology Implementation Office. We have done more to emphasize the health and economic benefits of the plan. That's something that the board has emphasized every time we've reported to you, that that's really important to do. And so we've tried to beef that up in a number of different places in the plan. What are the benefits of this plan? Tried to make it more accessible, understandable to the layperson. That's another comment that several board members have mentioned to us. And at the end of my presentation, we'll show you that video that I think will help us do that and may help you and your messaging to your constituents. Highlighting the importance of partnerships, especially with our regional agencies, is a comment we've gotten from several board members. So we've highlighted that more in the plan. And we've updated some of the technical elements and the control measures. And finally, one of the comments we got on this final bullet is, okay, so this vision lays out a fairly significant change to our fossil-based fuel economy. That will have impacts on communities and workers. And so we as a society have to sort of figure out plans for those communities and the workers as we transition to a different economy. We need to be mindful of the impacts that will have in those communities and those workers. That's certainly not something the Air District will do on its our own. That's a collective effort, but we certainly highlight the importance of us doing that as a society, as a region in the plan. So, to wind it down, we really do think that this is a very an unprecedented journey for us. We will need and hope to receive the cooperation of many people here and organizations in the Bay Area. And we really think that we are uniquely poised to do this, that we can continue to provide the leadership we have provided over the years. We've got the most aggressive state of any state in the country behind us working on these programs. We've got a very dedicated set of elected officials here in the Bay Area. We have a public and a community that is extremely engaged and supportive in these programs. We certainly have a culture of innovation here in the Bay Area. We have a very progressive and innovative business community, very engaged community groups, and now we have a blueprint that will help provide a roadmap for all of these efforts. So, this is not the slide that I expected to see, so I apologize. What it should say is we have two recommendations for you. We recommend that the Board of Directors adopt the Clean Air Plan, the 2017 Clean Air Plan. We also recommend that you adopt the final environmental impact report that was prepared for the plan. So under CEQA, we prepared an EIR where we looked at the potential environmental impacts of this plan. We found one potentially significant impact. Some of the control measures that address sulfur dioxide could result in wet scrubbers at certain facilities. Those wet scrubbers use water. There could be a water impact. Thank you. I think your printed version does have the correct recommendation. I apologize for that. I'm very sorry. And so there's one potential impact, the water consumption. And so in the resolution that you would be adopting, if you do approve this, would be to adopt that statement of overriding considerations, finding that the overall climate and health benefits of the plan do outweigh that one potentially significant adverse impact. So again, in conclusion, staff recommends that you adopt the final environmental impact report with those findings and adopt the 2017 Clean Air Plan. And with your indulgence, Mr. Vice Chair, if we could show that video before opening it up, if that would work, we would love to
show it. Do you want to see the video first?
I want to ask a question first.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Henry. very excellent report. Concerned about water. Before I vote on that, can you tell me what you mean by a significant impact? I mean, are we using X gallons today, and with this climate action, it'll go to double X?
It was a fairly conservative threshold that we set because we're a drought state, and we certainly encourage recycled water wherever possible, but we were not able to say conclusively that there would be absolutely no impact whatsoever. I think
I get that there'll be an impact. I'm trying to measure what that impact is.
I will have to check with staff, and I can get that to you. The other point I would make is that we will, all of our rules, I think the board is aware, we do a similar sort of CEQA analysis for each individual rule as we bring it to the Stationary Source Committee and to the board. So this impact will be examined in much greater detail when we bring that rule to the board of directors.
Sort of cart before the horse. My concern is if you're asking us to adopt findings and then we're going to talk about it afterwards. Go ahead.
Excuse me, that two-step process is a little awkward. It's just, it's how we do it at a very macro plan level, this CEQA analysis, and then the more detailed level when we adopt the individual measures. I know it's a little awkward.
It's very difficult for me. I sit on the Delta County Coalition, and one of our big issues is obviously how to have better water management, so that we can address the next drought. And it's difficult if we're going to be greatly creating a problem. I get that we're going to talk about it in a rulemaking later on, but it puts me in a real quandary.
Well, Director Mitchell, I don't want you to feel uncomfortable about it. If I could propose, if I could queue up the video for 3 minutes, and then I will talk to staff and try and have a better answer for you.
But if I can also, Director Mitchoff, it's a fairly low bar that we set for ourselves.
But when you set a low bar, no matter what, if you're increasing it by threefold, if the bar is a little higher, that only makes it twofold.
Agreed.
I'm doing an optic political issue here.
Can I have a question? I think you're just talking about extra water at a scrubber at how many refineries?
There's 5 refineries.
Okay. Could probably compute water demand issues, and you're getting an air quality benefit for that.
Right.
For doing that. So you may want to just quantify. It sounds like
that's all I want is
with the drought being declared over, with some extra water demand at 5 refineries for scrubbers, you can quantify that to give Supervisor Mitchoff assurance on that issue.
By the way, the drought is never over.
I would just ask that we see the video just in case the answer's in there.
I don't think the answer is in there, obviously.
No, just in case we come back to it before we open the public hearing. But let's.
But if I can, though, just before the video, if I can, it's not just the refineries. Just to be clear, Director Mitchoff, it is also a number of PM rules call upon us to apply water at a construction site and things like that.
I understand that. So
when you take a look at them at a macro level, at all the measures, we thought it was best and be safe to make sure that we at least call out the fact that you could have a water quality impact.
And I
water
get quantity that, impact. But you're asking us to adopt a resolution that specifically calls it out and specifically says it's a significant impact.
Correct.
I just need some quantification. That's all I'm asking for.
And the staff can provide that. But I guess also, if it could provide some comfort to recognize that as each measure does become a rule, this is going to be much more analyzed at a detail level, and the staff works hard to seek to minimize the water quality impacts because of those are the
their water quantity, not quality.
Water quantity.
I get that. I really do. But please, if there's significant in somewhere, somebody can say, oh my gosh, it's increased by fivefold or it's increasing by tenfold, I got a problem, folks. That's all I'm asking for, some sort of quantification.
Okay. Henry, show the movie.
So what I'd like to do is switch you over a little bit over to a video, because what we want to be able to do here while we're figuring out the water quantity impacts, or to be able to identify that for you, really want to be able to show you the results of some efforts here that is designed to be able to communicate to the public what this plan means. The average person isn't going to pick up this plan and know what it's about, but this is designed to be able to really be a communication tool, and hopefully folks in the public will get excited and read the plan and understand the kind of vision that we're proposing here for 2050. So, Marcy, if you can play the video.
This is what we're protecting. This is what we're creating. A carbon-free world where how we live and travel is healthy for us and our planet, and our production and consumption sustain themselves by using resources responsibly. Where green innovation defines the public health and wealth of our economy. And we join together to provide a healthy, sustainable world for our children and future generations. The wish list is now a to-do list. Our community is mobilized. We're on our way. Our choices show our understanding. Our homes reflect our commitment. We're moving forward every day. Our personal decisions sustain a cleaner world. Like pieces of a puzzle coming together, a seamless integration is underway. We are putting systems in place to support a better future. The communities we build reinforce the promise. We're changing out the old ways for innovative solutions. Energy is saved. Money is saved. Our bright ideas are building a brighter future. The Bay Area is the world's 21st largest economy, with the brightest minds and a culture of innovation. We have a track record of success, protecting public health and the climate. We have a plan for the future. By visualizing a post-carbon world, we're better able to identify the policies and actions that are necessary to get us there. In 2050, the buildings where we live, work, learn, and shop will produce rather than use energy. Our transportation sector will be transformed, powered by clean energy and people. The Bay Area economy will lead the world in the production and use of clean energy technologies. With our leadership and resolve, we will win the race to 2050, when our world will be sustainable and full of possibilities.
No Oscar. Okay. Henry, before you finish, I'd like to hear comments from the chair of Stationary Source. You want to hear it first? Let's do it. Okay, the three of you fight it out.
No, you need to go first.
Just, Director Mitchell, just a little further information. I'm reading from the final environmental impact report. So the threshold that we used to make this determination was 260,000 gallons per day. That's based on, would be equivalent to 500 single-family units of housing. We concluded that...
How many units of housing?
500.
Got it.
Single-family units. That the total, the... anticipated increased water demand region-wide, now this is for the whole region, would be 517,000 to 541,000 gallons per day, compared to a total regional consumption currently of 1.3 billion gallons per day.
That's so just excellent.
Put
that's
in perspective.
All, thank you. And that's very helpful. I also am wondering, I'm going to take this opportunity, is this on our website so that we can link our websites to this?
Yes, it will be.
It will be
So we were just getting it done to premiere it here. So it will be on our website.
Fabulous. Thank you.
So,
and thank you for getting that information. Very helpful.
Mr. Vice Chairman, before we go any further, this plan represents many years of effort by staff. I want to let the board know this. And there's been a lot of folks involved. But I wanted to specifically thank and recognize Jean Roggenkamp for her leadership, Henry Hoken for his leadership. And I'd like the opportunity for the team to stand up and be recognized. Please, if you can all stand up. Thank you.
Okay, Henry, continue. Is that it?
Mr. Vice Chair, I'm ready to answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Joya?
I just wanted to make a comment serving on the California Air Resources Board. This document is really consistent. It's a visionary document, and I think it's great, and it's very consistent with sort of the vision that's sort of laid out in the foundations of state law and the AB 32 scoping plan that is out on the street and will get amended and approved this May or June. In fact, the scoping plan adopted by the Air Resources Board identifies that local actions by local air districts, local cities, and local counties are all really important to meeting the state goal of the 2030 goal of a 40% reduction in GHGs and the executive order of 80% by 2050. So, and I think while the state has this goal, it understands that the only way it's achieved is through a combination of incentives, regulations, local actions, and that it's really up to regions and communities around California to help identify the specific strategies to reach that goal. So I just wanted to say this is not inconsistent with all of that, and it focuses, I think, really importantly on three types of emissions: GHGs, which have global impacts, criteria pollutants, which have regional impacts, and toxics, which have localized impacts, all three. So there's co-benefits, identifies opportunities for economic development, and I think what you're laying out here is that we haven't figured out, and the state hasn't, how you get exactly to all these goals. But technology is changing dramatically. It's continuing to change. That's why we've had all this improvement up till now. And that this state is incentivizing technologies that are being implemented around the world, including in China. And one of the things I think we hear about, because we hear about from folks here, is why does California do things alone? Well, actually, what a lot of California is doing is being done, as I say, is on a national level. China puts out on the street more 100,000 electric buses per year. So, I mean, we think we're like doing it by ourselves. There are others stepping forward. And finally, that we remain in California and in the Bay Area, one of the strongest economies in the world, with the strongest economic growth, even with this climate change goal and all the regulations that come out from that have resulted. I mean, some folks say, well, you know, it's going to affect the economy. We have continued to experience some of the strongest economic growth in his state and in this region, even with AB 32 and the implementation over the last 10 years.
Mr. Sinks.
Thank you. Well, I'm very excited by this plan. I compliment staff on the years of hard work it took to get us here. I was inspired by the video that you came out with in January or February that was shorter form than this. You listened to some feedback we had. You've now put actions we can all take in the video, whether we're at work or home. So I really appreciate the power of public persuasion and the excitement, right? The genuine excitement this creates. I do have some questions.
Sure.
And I, you know, for the first time had a chance to look at this socioeconomic analysis and have a few questions on it. The first regards measure SS20, which is the table on page 5/7 and of the plan. And the socioeconomic impact, when I go there to, so this is trying to, this gets to 1118 right. That's under consideration this year. And I couldn't find any financial or economic analysis of this rule in the plan and several other things. I mean, it is pretty thin compared to the Bain plan, and wondered if you had any comment on, did I just miss something? I did a text search through the document and didn't find SS20 as an example of a number of other things.
I don't think you did miss it, Director Sinks. So as I mentioned briefly when I was talking about the, there were many measures for which we did not estimate emission reductions nor cost. So when right. we put out the document, we just didn't have that information when we prepared the socioeconomic report. Since then, of course, there has been a lot of work on that particular rule. And so staff comes back to the board with a proposal for 1118, there absolutely will be an environmental document associated with that and a socioeconomic report that looks in greater detail at the effects to business community from that rule.
So what I like about this analysis, and I think we have a responsibility to be transparent as we impose new regulations and fees and other things, we do want to make sure that we have a net positive benefit from that. I realize there are different people paying, but we all, if we put regulation in right, we're all paying for it as consumers and consumers of products. I was also interested in the figure used for the social cost of carbon. So, for example, if you scroll back to slide 15, I was interested in where that came from. So, for example, 350 million, if I divide that by your 4.4 million metric tons per year, I get $80 per metric ton. There was a referral in one of the memos that came out to 62. The EPA, believe it or not, still has some information on climate change on their website, and they price it at a discount rate that varies from about 40 to, 60-ish dollars. I wondered if you could comment on, you know, how we think about the price tag we associate with carbon and also how we think about the issue of leakage, right? The idea that one of the speakers here talked to today that says, okay, there is a certain price for carbon globally, but when we punch it down here, does it just pop up someplace else with a little larger impact? And wondered if you might talk to that a bit.
Both very important issues. On the cost we estimated, we used an EPA document. It was $61 per ton, I believe, was the figure we used that we thought was sort of a reasonable midpoint. There's a wide range of different figures that people use, and this seemed like a reasonable midpoint number to use for our purposes.
So if I divide the 350 by 4.4 and I get 80, what is that? How am I supposed to think about that?
I would have to get back to you on that, Director Sinks. I'm not being nimble enough to do the math in my head right now, but I do know that the social cost of carbon that we used was $61 per ton. So I'd have to dig a little deeper to confirm this math.
Thank you.
On the leakage, absolutely very critically important point. This has come up almost every time the Board of Directors talks about these rules. We want to design our rules so to achieve the greatest reductions we can here in the Bay Area, but not just push the impacts off elsewhere. So I think I refer back to Director Joy's comments. I mean, we have tried wherever possible to be consistent with the Air Resources Board's programs and regulations. Continue to be a major focus for us. It does not help anything if we just cause emissions to go up in another region.
Thank you.
I have two more members that want to speak. Just a reminder, the public hearing has 17 cards. Director Ju, that's what I thought. Director Ju, then we'll open up the public hearing.
So I just had a quick question and follow-up. I think I heard Mr. Broadbent kind of go in this direction regarding to water use. that as these individual rules are developed, we're looking for, you know, non-potable solutions for them. That's obviously the highest priority. And then if we can't have that for whatever reason, then we're going to a potable option. So is that a fair assessment?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And then I just want to congratulate staff on a job well done. And I want to thank all of the public that provided their input into this process. You know, the underpinnings of, you know, what we're trying to achieve are only possible through a strategic plan exactly like this. In San Francisco, we've had our plan for many years, and it's allowed us to kind of set policies and move in a trajectory and also achieve our milestones sooner than possible. So we have a 40% reduction by 2025 and an 80% reduction by 2050 goal in our city. And just today, you know, Mayor Lee announced that we actually surpassed our own internal benchmark of trying to get to 25% by 2017, 2 years ahead of schedule. So we're at a 28% reduction. But more importantly, to Director Joya's point, it didn't come at the sacrifice of our local economy or our growth in population. So if you track from 1990 to now, we've seen a 19% growth in population within San Francisco, and our GDP has grown by 78% during that same period. So you've seen good economic growth while being able to implement sustainable solutions. So again, I just want to commend all of the hard work that you guys have put into this and look forward to all the results.
Thank you.
Okay, public hearing is now open. I'm not even going to look to my right or left. I believe we're up to at least 18 cards. Please call the first six names and we'll see if we can get this. 2 minutes. I think 2 minutes. I wish I could extend it. No, just 2 minutes per speaker. We're trying to get this so that we don't lose the quorum. I know that everybody's been waiting patiently. Nobody's lining up while we haven't called any names. Go ahead.
Laura Tam, Allison Brooks, Paula Baker, Keasley Jones, Mark Roost, and David Gassman.
Okay, thank you.
Wasn't expecting to come up first. Thank you very much. My name's Laura Tam. I'm here with SPUR. We're a nonprofit organization, and we are enthusiastically supportive of the Clean Air Plan today. We did a report in 2016 called Fossil Free Bay Area. I've spoken about it here and to some of you in the past. And this plan will help implement the best vision that we've enshrined in our report as well. We think that it contains a bold vision to demonstrate leadership, reduce emissions 80% below 1990 levels by 2050, an effective decarbonization of our economy that will stop climate change and create a model for other urban regions to follow. We're really very supportive of the vision that's contained in this plan. We really look forward to implementation, helping the Bay Area to implement this, because we think that the Bay Area has for a very long time, as you all know, been a leader in the air quality control field throughout the world. And the plan in Chapter 2 talks about some of the public health benefits that we've gotten, reducing things like air toxics and particulate pollution by tens of percent over the past 30 years. And so we have a track record of success we can build on to continue these public health gains, as well as to reduce the emissions that are causing climate change. So I'll keep it brief so that everyone else can have something to say. But again, our organization, which is based in San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland, has enthusiastic support for this plan and hope that it passes today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Good morning, directors. I'm Allison Brooks, Executive Director of the Bay Area Regional Collaborative. I'm delighted to be here to support this really visionary and important plan for the Bay Area and want to commend the great work of the staff and your leadership in supporting this important work. And I'm very excited to work on the implementation of this plan with the Air District and with the other regional agency partners working in all of your communities to help implement this important work on the ground and help meet the state's aggressive goals as well. So thank you, and really want to, again, support the great work of the agency in accomplishing this important work. Thank you.
Thank you, Allison. Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name is Keasley Jones, and I'm just a concerned citizen, and I'm a parent of a senior at Berkeley High School and a recent graduate, and I work with the Berkeley High School Development Group, which is representing the 3,000 families that are at Berkeley now and a lot of the alumni families in the East Bay and elsewhere. And I just want to commend what you've done here in putting together this plan. I think it's really, really impressive. And I think about what we're doing here, looking at 33 years ahead. And it's not easy to wrap one's head around that. But if you look back 33 years, 1984, that was when HIV was first identified. It's when the first Macintosh computer was released. It's when the first 3.5-inch disc was released. It's when the CD player was first released. Those all happened in 1984. So if you think ahead 33 years, where are we going to be? And, of course, the pace of change has been increasing tremendously. So what this here represents, it's a marker in time for a plan that is really, really important. And it's a collaboration of science, what people have learned about what's happening in the climate, and government, and industry. And I think that it's really critical for all of us to be working together to make this plan happen. And it's going to take a lot of work in the years ahead. It's going to take a lot of back and forth bickering around what we do, how we do it. But to have these goals established, especially for the young people, you know, if I think back to when I was in high school, okay, I could go to the gas station and put fuel in my car and it was full of lead. Okay, how did we get lead out of gasoline? Why did we do that? We did that because we came to understand the importance of not breathing the lead fumes coming off the gasoline. You know, it's that kind of action that happens with government bodies saying, here's a problem and we need to address it. So I just want to say thank you, and I'm going to take this to the people at Berkeley High and say, look what's happening. This is something to get optimistic about.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marcy, call 6 more names, if you would, please, before our next speaker. Come on up.
Matt Wolf, Bob Brown, Glenn Turner, Jed Holtzman, Bob Harlow, and Janet Stromberg.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Paula Baker. I'm a citizen of Berkeley, and I'm just here to say that earlier today, someone who knows pretty well the lay of the land said that no one ever got a vote based on action they took in a regional meeting. I'm here to commit, because I'm so supportive of this plan, to write a letter to the editor in each of your districts when re-election time comes, should you choose to run.
Don't
again.
Wait. I might need it now.
All right. I'm happy to do that, because this is an excellent plan. I personally thank the staff for preparing it, and I am so encouraged that my regional government is taking this kind of forward-looking action, and I can't begin to express my enthusiasm for it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker, please. Jump right up. No waiting.
Mark Roost, Seaway Battery, Green Fleets Group, and DesignEarth.net. Regarding this leakage idea, I want to counter Chevron. It's a red herring ploy. Humanity is moving to reduce and end use of fossil fuels globally. I think it can be done in 12 years, 15 years, totally. That industry is trying to divide and conquer, where every year they stay in business is a win for the dark side and a loss for life. Their proper role going forward is a global cleanup of all their spills over the last 150-plus years, and training their employees for renewable energy and energy efficiency jobs. Like the priorities in the plan on the how does this plan get us there slide, like them a lot. And the control strategies, all of those are good. A novel way to work with the business and technology communities is to examine realistic potentials of developments in key enabling technologies that will cut costs and boost performance for energy efficiency, electric vehicle range, and renewable energy, and provide strategic financial support, which I think is in your plan, it sounds like, to the companies with the most promising technologies to make it less costly to achieve your regional performance goals. And on the landfill thing, by the way, there are methane digesters in Ogden, Utah that are extremely good and cost-effective. I'd add charging make-ready in the model solar ordinance project. It's charging make-ready in new construction and major remodels. This has already been adopted in San Francisco and will be adopted in Oakland, so you can make that region-wide. Elevated bidirectional ultralight monorail down in the getting there, the control strategy, work with MTCA, BAG, local governments.
Thank you, sir.
That's a good way to do it.
Next speaker.
Hello. My name is David Gassman. I'm a volunteer with Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice, and I am also active in No Coal in Oakland, which relates to point 14D about the former Oakland Army base, and I live in Oakland. I simply wanted to say that, one, I'm quite impressed with the plan as presented. It seems quite admirable. I simply wanted to observe, mention one, I have, like so many other people here in this room, I have a vested interest in all of this. And I want you all to be quite clear on what my vested interest is. My vested interest is that I breathe. I breathe air. And all my friends do, and everything I know and love does. I simply wanted to observe again that I want to address page 4, the plan regarding fine particulate matter and reduced air toxics in impacted communities, and address the rules 1118 and 1216 about precisely those matters. Especially the impact on air toxics in impacted communities. Those rules need to go through to see that those communities are protected. And if they don't, this plan and plans like it will not work. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Will not happen.
Next speaker, please.
Hello again, members. Bob Brown with Western States Petroleum Association. And I just wanted to share a few contextual comments, high-level jobs and economic impact numbers, as well as the consumption reality here. The Bay Area refineries employ more private sector union workers than any other Bay Area employer. And these are thousands of hardworking people who care about the environment, who care about their health, who care about safety. As such, they make the cleanest fuels in the world, the cleanest and safest refineries in the world. The Bay Area refinery operations contribute $4.2 billion in local and state tax revenue annually. On the consumption front, California consumes more than 10 million gallons of jet fuel every day, 40 million gallons of transportation fuels every day, and over 95% of the state's 32-plus million vehicles run on conventional fuels. Recognizing here there are some hard choices that we face and future generations need to make to meet the energy demands of the world's sixth largest economy. Bay Area refineries have made significant advances in the new technologies and innovation, which we've heard about today, to achieve great benefits for the Bay Area's air quality. Bay Area refineries emit 2-3% of pollutants that cause smog. Over the past 30 years, refineries have reduced emissions at more than twice the rate of other sources, and greater than 60% reduction in criteria pollutants since 1990. So as you consider this plan that calls for a fossil-free environment and policies to seek the elimination of fossil fuel usage, we just ask that you consider the tremendous improvements that we've achieved in air quality and the great public demand for energy. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Hi, my name is Glenn Turner. I have a small business in Oakland, California. And my business is right near the BART station. And I think the Plan Bay Area for consolidating transit is a great one. And I'm glad to see that this plan is in concert with that. One thing I didn't see here, which I can't imagine you didn't think of, is the whole problem with commuting. I will not drive during certain times of day, and I'm hopefully lots of other people don't drive, but it's still the roads are hugely congested. If we had really good electric bus service throughout all the counties that ran reasonably often, if we had BART stations that were dispersed along a wider range that ran more often, like 24 hours, we would see fewer people having to commute. And the truth of it is now it is so expensive to live in the core part of the Bay Area that people are forced to relocate out into the boonies, well, in my opinion, and drive. And these are like single-person cars driving. So I didn't see anything here. Perhaps I missed a section. The other thing, I think I was really delighted to hear the question about this significant water supply impact. You know, that is a huge concern, and I think it's important to see, you know, to see that here in just a bald way. I was, thank you very much for bringing that. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity to provide comment on the Clean Air Plan. My name is Matt Wolf, and I co-chair the Built Environment Committee for the Bay Area Regional Health Inequities Initiative, also known as BARHI. BARHI is a coalition of the Bay Area's 11 public health departments and is committed to advancing health equity. The Built Environment Committee of BARHI focuses on the intersection of the built environment and public health. On behalf of both BARHI and specifically the Built Environment Committee, I would like to express our enthusiastic support for this plan. We believe that the strategies identified in this plan will provide needed guidance for local communities to reduce air pollutants and protect the public health and protect the environment. Climate change has significant and cascading impact on public health. Studies such as the 2014 U.S. National Climate Assessment identify how climate change impacts chronic diseases. Extreme heat increases hospital admissions for cardiovascular, kidney, and respiratory disorders. Flooding and extreme storms can increase the production of allergens, respiratory illness, and waterborne disease. Air pollution exposure can worsen chronic diseases such as asthma and heart disease. And all of these disproportionately impact those from suffering from established social, political, environmental, and economic inequality. We would specifically like to address some of the Clean Air Plan's environmental recommendations, as investment in walking, bicycling, and transportation have additional health co-benefits besides the reduction of pollutants. And the investigation of solar storage may help reduce the health impact of power outages during emergency events. For these reasons, BARHI supports the Clean Air Plan and looks forward to working with the Bay Area Air Quality Management District in supporting their vision. Thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker, after our clerk calls the rest of the names so you get some time to warm up.
The remaining speakers are Richard Gray, Rand Robel, Jillian Adams, David DeSanti, Bill Pinkham, Stephen Yang, and Paul Adler.
Thank you.
Thank you. Vice Chair Hudson and remaining directors, I really appreciate your sticking around through this long meeting. Also really want to thank staff. They got clapped for earlier, but if you have read through the two volumes of this plan, it's a tremendous amount of work that went into it. Jed Holtzman from 350 Bay Area in strong support of this plan. This is a first in the nation, comprehensive metropolitan area level plan to address clean air and climate protection and reduce GHGs, get us started down the pathway towards 2050 that we need in the Bay Area to have a stable and healthy future, and I might add, a stable and healthy economy. As you'll see in the plan, a wide range of stakeholders participated in the creation of the plan, a wide range of commenters commented on the plan, and this is a culmination of 5 years of work from our organization, from the Climate Protection Resolution through the Climate Action Work Program, the expansion of your climate staff, and now finally the creation of this first regional climate protection strategy. Very, very thankful for your staff for their cooperation working with us over the last several years. The plan shows that we have a very long way to go, and my most important message to you is that this plan represents a phase shift at this agency. It counts on robust action and rulemaking every year for the foreseeable future, much more than we've seen over the last years, and this will require strong board involvement, engagement, and support in order for this plan to get implemented properly. We are excited to work with staff and the board to help the district implement this plan going forward, and would value the opportunity to meet with any and all of you individually to discuss the plan and salient implementation points. Would want to highlight over $1 billion in cost savings per year, and this is an underestimate, as many of these measures do not have estimates, many of the control measures do not have estimates for them at all. Lastly, Exxon, Shell, and BP have announced that they would like us to stay in the Paris Climate Accords, and I would ask the refinery workers here, who we support, to ask your bosses to get on board. The clean energy jobs of the future should be unionized, and they could be yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen. Next speaker, please.
Janet Stromberg, 350 Bay Area, representing our 12,000 members. I just want to reiterate that we are enthusiastically supportive of this landmark plan and very grateful for the very hard work that staff has put into this and to their outreach to us in collaboration. In response to a comment that was made earlier today, we recognize that greenhouse gases are global pollutants, but all greenhouse gases are emitted locally, just like all other pollutants are emitted locally, and local control is critical in order to move the whole world forward. So your efforts are very, very important here. And as an example of that, I want to draw your attention back to this slide. And if you happen to be looking at it sometime, you don't need to pull it out now, but if you look at 2020, you'll see that there's a gap between what AB 32 was projected to reduce in the Bay Area versus what the actual emissions are projected to be. And that is the reason, that is the underlying reason why 350 Bay Area came to this board in 2013 and requested a revamped climate resolution. So I think we're going to build it down. We're going to be with you working together collaboratively, and we think that we're on the path to success. And I just want to express that appreciation today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Bob Harlow. I live in Greenbrae, California, and I represent the United Marin Rising, about 700 or 800 members, and the Mill Valley Community Action Network, a similar size. And thank you for creating this. It's, I urge you to adopt it in the EIR and to get about the business of finalizing the rules 1116, 1118, 1216, and 13.1, and to do them as a package. They work together. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Directors, my name is Richard Gray. I'm also with 350 Bay Area, a steering committee member. We are now at the end of a five-year process that began with 350 Bay Area leaders asking the district to create a climate protection action plan. We are extraordinarily proud of the part that our leaders, Jed Holtzman and Janet Stromberg, have played in shepherding this proposal from its beginning. Through many meetings with your staff to help flesh out the details, to compiling comments from our group, and to this moment when we hope that you will approve this plan. You can also be very proud of the staff members who worked on this plan, particularly Henry Hilkin and Abby Young, and your public engagement officer, Luz Gomez, who included us in those meetings. By approving the Clean Air Plan, you have an opportunity to show leadership that this district can play in moving California towards its ambitious goals in response to climate breakdown. Your action will be noticed and respected across the country. 350 Bay Area looks forward to continuing this partnership into the implementation phase, and thank you for acting on this visionary plan for the Bay Area community.
Thank you. Next speaker.
So, good afternoon. My name is Gillian Adams. I'm a senior planner at the Association of Bay Area Governments. On behalf of ABAG, I wanted to commend the Air District on publication of the 2017 Clean Air Plan, Spare the Air, Cool the Climate. For many decades, the Air District has been instrumental in improving air quality and protecting public health on behalf of Bay Area residents. With this plan, the Air District continues its leadership on these issues and on addressing the expected impacts of climate change for the region. By starting with an aspirational vision for a post-carbon future in 2050, the plan helps everyone in the region identify the steps necessary over the next several decades to ensure we have a more sustainable and equitable future for the Bay Area. The plan's focus on encouraging new development that offers safe and convenient access to jobs, shopping, and services by transit, bicycle, and walking and its commitment to social equity in addressing air quality impacts are consistent with a vision that ABAG and the Metropolitan Transportation Commission outlined in Plan Bay Area. Air District staff has engaged a wide variety of stakeholders in developing the Clean Air Plan, and we very much appreciate their collaborative approach and engagement with ABAG. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please.
Good morning. My name is Dr. David DeSanti. I'm the president of the Institute for Bird Populations located in Point Reyes Station. Our 28 years of continent-wide research has indicated that many of the declines in some of our most beloved species locally, like Orange Crown Warbler, Wilson's Warbler, Swainson's Thrush, Pacific Slope Flycatcher, have been caused by the intersection of climate change and the habitats needed by these bird populations, both here locally and on their neotropical wintering grounds. It's become clear that what we need to do as a species on this planet to keep our bird populations healthy is to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions that drive climate change. Of course, this has to be done locally. We can't do everything in the world, and so I have tremendous appreciation for this climate plan, especially the proposed climate protection strategy that's part of the plan, and I urge you to adopt it for the benefit not only of human beings, but for the populations of all the birds that we so love. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, please, Stephen.
Hi again, Board of Directors. I'm going to summarize some of the points I made before since I already made them and then add a few more. My first point was that climate change and greenhouse gases are fundamentally different than other pollutants. For greenhouse gases, if emissions are reduced here but increased elsewhere, climate change is still here. It may actually get worse. It requires a different approach, most notably incentivizing voluntary lifestyle change. So if you're looking to actually mitigate climate change, I'm asking you to ask your staff to reframe the goals in terms of global greenhouse gases and to ensure that control measures are evaluated against that metric. How you achieve reduction at stationary sources and to achieve state goals makes all the difference if you're going to actually impact climate change. If the policy is to say, hey, let's limit methane from cow farms in California, and those cow farms move out of state, the demand for beef and milk is still there. Now you just added emissions because you need to transport those products into the state. However, if you can incentivize a shift in diet such that people voluntarily stop eating beef and milk, then you actually reduce global greenhouse gases. Don't get me wrong, the plan has incentives. And those measures from a scientific perspective make sense. What I'm concerned about is the way that the greenhouse gas goals are framed and whether those the control measures proposed are measured against global greenhouse gases. Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker.
Hi, Rand Robel, Communications Coordinator for 350 Bay Area. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, Henry, and thank you, climate staff. This is exactly what is needed. For people who see the future coming, you are leaders. This is it. I couldn't ask for a better thing. From all evidence, this is fantastic. I have to acknowledge Janet Stromberg and Jed Holtzberg and the entire BayCap campaign for helping get you to the 2013 resolution for the 80% goal. And now you have done it. You've gone from a goal, hey, it's great to have goals, to a plan, to a map, to a bridge to the future. It's here. You've done it. We're on the threshold. When future generations look back and say, why are we dealing with 2, 3, 4, 5 degrees centigrade hotter planet? What were they thinking? Who tried? Who are the heroes? I hope they look back on today and they see that this board made that bold decision. Those priceless and tangible benefits are real. You're leading the world. You're leading the nation here today. I can't tell you. The hope is tremendous. That's what you're providing to this Bay Area. You're showing how to do it. People have talked about leakage, about, oh, it's just going to go up somewhere else.
a game of whack-a-mole. I've talked about that before. You are whacking the mole. You are showing people how to do it. If this area can do it, you've got a model for the entire nation, the entire world, that says we can survive, we can prosper, we can thrive without carbon, leading us to our post-carbon, clean, cool future. Thank you so much. You are heroes for generations to come.
Thank you. Next speaker. You don't need to get as close to the mic.
Thank you, Vice Chair Dave Hudson. Paul Adler with Phillips 66. I'll keep my comments very brief, and I just want the board members to remember a term and a subject that probably can be debated for the future, and that is emissions leakage. It's a discussion that I hope each of the board members can put some time and some thought into, collaborate with the staff, and let's really talk about what leakage means. Because when we talk about Bay Area greenhouse gases, shifting the emissions outside of the Bay Area, does that really help the global problem that we have? It's a subject that has been brought up a couple times. It is controversial, but I really hope that each board members can take that seriously when you analyze future rules and regulations. How is leakage playing an effect in the entire global GHG emission problem? Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I make a brief comment? Since Paul's from Contra Costa, can I just make a brief comment?
Very.
Paul, I think these issues are indeed being discussed on a statewide level. What we're doing here is going to be thoughtful in that regard. These are exactly the same issues that the industry raised at the state level, that there's been a lot of thought, there's a plan, and as I said earlier, our economy is still going strong, and I think leakage issues are going to get considered. But the plan identifies not just reductions in GHG, it identifies reductions in criteria pollutants and toxic emissions in which leakage isn't the issue. That's about improving public health and air quality in the Bay Area and for people who live around all these facilities or live near freeways. So the idea is that air quality for the Bay Area is as important a part of this plan as GHG reductions. And those leakage issues on GHG are getting discussed. I'm sure we're going to continue to think about those issues, but that should not be a reason for not going forward and approving this plan. I just wanted to point that out. Because everyone's failing to recognize...
Hold it.
Everyone's failing to recognize air quality impacts, air quality improvements
one last speaker.
Identified.
One more, guys. Just one more. Let's get... Please come up and have it. Then we'll put it before the board.
Yeah. Morning. My name is Bill Pinkham. I'm a former director of Bike East Bay. It used to be called East Bay Bicycle Coalition. I'm on the Contra Costa County Bicycle Advisory Committee. I'm vice chair. And also, there's another county committee, which is called BAC. I won't go into that. And also, member of the participant in the Richmond Bicycle Advisory, Bicycle Ped Advisory Committee. I want to applaud you on the plan. I want to applaud the staff. However, there are a couple of little omissions that I would like to see, and I think the bike community would like to see. One is we've pushed for and hoped for a continuous, seamless bike system in the Bay Area. Bay Trail's nice, not quite seamless yet. It's great, but most people don't live on the Bay Trail. Would also like to see many more bike racks. In I think it's Stockholm, they require in any new building to have bike racks inside and out. We may not get that, but a lot more racks, secure racks, would be very helpful, especially indoors. We saw, you know, very nice pictures of riders in the video, and that's fine. But hopefully they're just not window dressing. Bicycle coalitions have seen this before, so we would hope that one of the big emphases is on adequate funding for those bike features that I just talked about. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, last call. Anyone out in the audience hasn't spoken, want to speak? Very last call, final call. Public hearings closed. The matter's before the board. Mr. Kim, you had your light on?
I did. Thank you. Yeah, you know, I think it's been made clear that this plan is a big picture plan. It's a big tent, and we can work out details on leakage, on bike investments, on water quality impacts, on socioeconomic impacts on the two rules that have been flagged as a possible concern. In terms of big picture, this plan was started with a different administration, and as we got close to the goal line, the administration changed. And I'm glad to see that the Air District didn't blink. This plan may not be 100% Trump-proof, but we'll roll with the punches. Thank you, Henry, Gene, and others for writing this thing in plain English. Not all of it is plain English, but the front end is, and you can understand it. I know a lot of the focus, we're all pivoting towards toxics, important. We're pivoting towards greenhouse gases, important. The one thing that I talked to Henry about that I thought we could just sort of close the loop on, it doesn't have to be today. I would just ask if staff could just clarify that how close are we to achieving the ozone standard and the particulate standard? I know that we're not required to identify what that date is, but perhaps at a future meeting, staff could talk about when we're going to cross the goal line so that we can talk to our constituents and say, when it comes to just the criteria pollutants, here's how close we are. And again, congrats to staff for the great job.
Ms. Chavez and then Mr. Ross.
Did you want to let him respond?
Mr. Vice Chair, did you want us to try to, we can answer Dr. Kim's.
You want to do them one question at a time? Okay.
Well, I
just no, go ahead,
it's
Henry.
A very important question, yeah. And I'm going to look to Henry to add to my remarks. But currently, we're in a situation where we've had enough years of clean data that we're in attainment with a PM standard, PM 2.5 standard. With relative to ozone, there's two standards that we look at. We look at the one-hour ozone standard and the eight-hour ozone standard. One is a state, federal. Henry, you want to talk about, because we banned it in terms of just generally about where we think we're going to come into attainment.
Certainly. Thank you, Jack. So we have a very clean record for PM. We are below the standard for the PM standard with respect to ozone. We expect to achieve the state one-hour ozone standard by 2022 and the state eight-hour ozone standard by 2025.
Okay. I didn't mean to cut you. What I believe you should do is what I thought he was asking, is to agendize this, to discuss it. And I think the stationary source should look at least once a year anyway.
Well, Mr. Vice Chair, the staff is thinking that what we need to do is really hold our feet to the fire, yeah, and implement this plan. And so we are thinking that we're going to bring this back to you annually. And we think, frankly, the executive committee is probably the right vehicle. Okay. And because there's a lot of measures, $4.5 million on the table to really get out there to assist cities and counties and others. And so, as you've heard from 350 Bay Area and others, they're going to be working alongside of us and kind of making sure we implement it. So that's a good thing.
Okay, Supervisor Chavez.
Thank you. First of all, I wanted to also just commend the staff for the incredible body of work. Two areas that I want to make sure that come back to the board prior to them going just to the executive committee. And one is what a work plan would look like. You've done a really good job in the plan of trying to walk the line of a work plan and a vision document. But I think as it relates to some of the implementation strategies, absent a work plan, I think it will be more difficult for the board and all the different boards that we sit on to be part of implementation across. You know, we need our own work plans, I guess, is what I want to highlight. But the second issue that I think is really critical is is one of the economic issues that was raised. And I just wanted to say how much I appreciate Director Sink's bringing this document together. It was interesting to look at something this small relative to this plan, given that the economics are a very critical component of what will happen. Now, I recognize part of the reason for that is that many of the goals are still very broad, and so these would come by program and project. But when you look at what's happened, particularly in the manufacturing industry, and I'm sure this is an issue that many of the people here are concerned about, when people transition into new jobs, the way those jobs pay are pretty low. And relative to the jobs that people have now. So the whole component of how the economics of the region will be impacted by this is actually a pretty significant body of work. It may not belong mainly to BACMED, but to other organizations, for example, that are doing job training or that are part of economic development, economic recruitment, Bay Area Council, for example, would be an area I'd want to take a look at. So I think the economics of this is something that we have to think a lot more about, and who our partners are with job training, any of those other issues that have been raised today. So anyway, I wanted to say thank you, but I am looking forward to next steps with a work plan along with how we identify partners that we may not have at the table now, but we're going to need their support.
Thank you, Mr. Ross. And just a reminder, this will require a roll call vote if we do a motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank the staff as well for their voluminous work product here. It took years. And I want to also thank the stakeholders on both sides for holding our feet to the non-wood-burning fire over the years. And I just want to address a couple things. I'll try to be as brief as I can. You know, we are 0.1% of the world's population. And so when I hear things about leakage, you know, I kind of sit there and chafe a little bit, because as we've had a couple of speakers say, in Scandinavia, they're ahead of us on bikes. And in China, they're ahead of us on electric buses. So, you know, we may be part of the leakage in the reverse direction. So we may be catching up. We like to fancy ourselves that we are the first in everything in all categories, but we are not. We actually lag in some categories. We like to think of ourselves as number one, but we're not. So this plan helps us get there. And when it comes to playing, you know, whack-a-mole, I like to call it whack-a-molecule, it is almost a zero-sum game in some ways, where you take one away, you reduce one, but you've got to make up for it somewhere else. And what are the downsides of that replacement? So, you've got that constant equation and trying to drill down, well, which energy is better to use if you drill down all the way, you know, so, you know, solar and wind power is better, but maybe wind is generated power is a little better because of the lifespan of this and that. I mean, you can just drive yourself crazy, but you have to progress. And when you progress, there are winners and losers. I'm sure 120 years ago, there were meetings where the blacksmiths were saying, these automobiles, you know, are going to lose, you know, are going to take our jobs, and we won't have any jobs anymore, and automobiles are bad. Well, you know, maybe they were thinking 120 years ago, but then if you drill down, well, all that horse manure on the streets was emitting methane, so, you know, and also other health problems. So, you know, change, there's always going to be winners and losers, but you want to find the change that benefits the most winners. So you can look at the economic documents, and back when they had horse manure everywhere, they also had other health problems. When you look at these health care savings for society, a lot of these people up here are with county hospitals, you know, they run county hospitals and county medical facilities that have to deal with all the immediate asthma problems and the heart attacks that come from too much particulate matter. Those are tangible health care benefits. And when you look at that $736 million, I mean, what does a heart attack cost to treat? One heart attack. What does one asthma?
Half a million
for starters. Exactly. So, you know, those are low numbers. So when we do the math, I think these are not taking in. And you have to cross-reference, too. The GHG number is also, there's reduced ozone and PM if you reduce the GHG, so you have to factor in some of that, too. So, but the clearly, $1 billion a year, that's like having one Super Bowl a year of economic benefit. So, and that's a low number. So I'll get off the healthcare, but technology is always improving. We're just trying to keep up with it with our technology implementation. I mean, there are new coatings that are coming out on buildings that suck the heat out and transmit the heat up through the atmosphere in wavelengths that go through the ozone layer. I mean, there's all these new types of things that are coming up that we have yet to catch up to and are going to be help us meet our goals. Finally, I'll just drill down to the one thing in transportation, where transportation is the one thing, was the biggest slice of the pie. And we're all big on electrification. We're all big on having hundreds of thousands of electric vehicles. Well, one thing I'd like to know is how many plugs are there? And I think that we're going to have a problem in a few years when we're getting everybody to be electrified and get these electric vehicles. And now the second generation of electric vehicles are coming on the market, so everybody gets a Model 3. And then all the other cars are coming onto the secondary market. So you get this tangible effect of more people which means that we're going to have more need for plugs. And I'll just liken it back to the year 2000 or 2002 when you're in the airport and there was one plug over there behind the bench by the trash can and there were five people waiting for it. And I'm afraid that that's where we're at when it comes to EV plugs. And I'd like to see us focus on if we're going to get people to do this and the cars are being manufactured, we've got to get that infrastructure in so that it's ubiquitous and available and we don't have people with, charge rage or charger rage going on because we need to be successful. Thank you.
Secretary Rice.
Yes, just very quickly, I wanted also to express my appreciation to staff and to everybody who collaborated on this work. And I also appreciate a really readable document. And then just really briefly, with my local government hat on, I just think it's so important, the leadership that we're showing here at the regional level in terms of the signal it's sending to local government. As we at the local government level are starting to deal now and assess what we're going to have to deal with regards to sea level rise. So primarily on that climate aspect, we're doing in Marin, we're doing a bay shore sea level rise vulnerability study and a coastal vulnerability study. And the impact to public infrastructure and to private property is going to be astronomical in our county and in many counties around the bay. And it's probably too late to reverse before more damage is done, obviously too late, but maybe there can be some mitigation. But frankly, at the local level, where we're having to do a lot of the lifting locally, and we'll make the difference, to have that our efforts reinforced and supported at the regional level and the state level and as it goes back and forth is just critically important. So I'm really grateful. I'm proud to be sitting on this board today and look forward to really having great progress reports in the years ahead as we implement this plan.
Is that your motion?
And I would move to, are we adopting?
The two resolutions?
Second.
Perfect.
All right.
Okay, we got a motion.
Chairman?
Yes.
Over here.
Somebody said something somewhere.
Yeah, over
go
here.
Ahead.
Yeah. The fog. Congratulations. Good document. For the industry people here, this is the roadmap of where this region is going. And so I think you're going to certainly have to navigate through this. But I want to add on to Board Member Chavez's comments. I hope as we move forward, we really look at the financial strategy of how we're going to implement much what's in here. You know, as I go through the document, many of the things that we implement are going to have an impact on the most vulnerable residents of the Bay Area. And we have to be, very conscious of that as we go forward. And, for instance, you talk about this, the water industry. I mean, I've got cities in my community that water is at a premium now, and one of these major industries is in one of those cities. And so if you divert that water, it's going to have a major impact. And so we have to make sure that we clearly move forward as a partner solving these problems as we achieve these objectives in this plan. And so, but I really would like to see a little more emphasis on the financial strategy as to how we're going to accomplish as this comes forward.
Thank you. We have a motion, Rice, second, Wagon Connect, for Resolution 2017-2 and 2017-3. Roll call, please. I would ask that we keep comments.
Mr. Vice Chair.
I didn't get very far with that one. Go ahead.
There are two elements here, and they really need to be taken up separately.
That's what I was asking earlier.
Approval of the EIR, and the second one is to adopt the plan. Those are the two resolution numbers, but we should take them as separate items.
Okay, let me make this separate. We have a motion, a separate motion for certifying the EIR Resolution 2017-02.
And adopting the Statement of Overriding Considerations.
I will make that motion, Mr. Chair.
I'll second it.
Okay, that motion now is from Groom, second Barrett. I don't even want to say anything because I'm afraid a light will come on. Marcy, please call the roll call vote.
Director Sparing. Director Abe-Koga. Director Ronan.
Aye.
Director Cutter.
Aye.
Director Sanchez.
Aye.
Director Groom. I'm sorry, Director Kim.
Yes.
Director Mitchoff.
Yes.
Director Sinks.
Aye.
Director Ju.
Aye.
Director Zane. Director Joya.
Aye.
Secretary Rice?
Aye.
Chair Nis, Vice Chair Hudson? Director Groom? Yes. Director Miley?
Yes.
Miley and Haggerty are not here, I would just like to say. Director Wagon Connect?
Yes.
Director Ross?
Yes.
Director Barrett?
Yes.
Director Chavez?
Yes.
Director Canepa?
Yes.
Director Kaplan and Sheehy are not here. The ayes have it.
Okay, thank you. The second motion was from Rice, second Wagon Connect. We're going to get you back in there, and that would be 2017-03. What else do you need?
To adopt the 2017 Clean Air Plan, I move.
Okay. Second, roll call, please.
Director Sparing. Director Abekoga. Director Ronan. Director Cutter. Director Sanchez. Director Kim. Director Mitchell. Director Sinks. Director Ju. Director Zane. Director Joya.
Aye.
Secretary Rice.
Aye.
Chair Nis. Vice Hudson.
Yes.
Vice Chair Hudson.
Whatever.
Director Groom.
Yes.
Director nice. Miley and Director Haggerty are not present. Director Wagon Connect.
Yes.
Director Ross.
Yes.
Director Barrett.
Yes.
Director Chavez.
Yes.
Director Canepa.
Yes.
Kaplan and Sheehy are not present. The ayes have it.
Thank you. I would just say I know a lot of people are going to want to turn on lights for comments. I'd ask you to keep it to or to save it for board member comments because we have to move into closed session. Conference with legal counsel for existing litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54936.9A, Douglas Hall versus Bay Area Air Quality Management District.
So APCO, chair report, and board member comments.
We have to report out a closed session.
Oh, and report out a closed session. Sir.
We're good? Okay. We are back in open session. We met in closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9A. This is a following case, Douglas Hall versus Bayer Air Quality Management District, and there was no action taken. Public comment is open. Speakers who did not have the opportunity in the first round, anybody out there who want to speak to us in public comment? Going once, going twice, final call. Public comment is closed. Board member comments, that's B-O-A-R-D. Wow. I'm not going to ask a second time. Report of the executive officer.
Yes, Mr. Vice Chairman, and board members that are still here, thank you. First of all, I didn't properly thank Lisa Fasano for the video, and I really did want to, if she's still here, if she's listening, she did a great job in piecing that together for the district and always has. Couple items. Air quality, we're sort of in the middle between seasons right now. The winter season's over. I think we officially begin the summer smog season here soon. But for the most part, we've had a lot of inclement weather, so the air quality's been very good. I wanted to mention a couple of things to you. First, you all have, I know, been watching what's been going on in terms of the Trump administration. And I wanted to mention very directly to you that we remain concerned about the actions being taken by this administration as it relates to climate change in particular. We put out a statement expressing our concerns after President Trump signed an executive order directing EPA to essentially begin the process in dismantling the Clean Power Plan. This is something out of the Obama administration, the main vehicle to implement the Paris Climate Agreement. He has yet to announce whether he will formally remove or seek to be able to remove the U.S. from that agreement. So I just thought I'd give you all a heads up. We're watching that very closely, and we'll certainly report to you any kind of movement in this area. I get a chance to meet with the EPA administrator actually in a couple of weeks, and so I'll keep the board informed of that. And then I wanted to mention very specifically, as you have read, we have received a letter from CARB, specifically Richard Corey, as it relates to the rulemakings that we're going through. This letter, and I think copies are provided to you, essentially delineates their support for the development of 1216, 13.1, and 1118. As well as calling for additional monitoring in and around the communities surrounding the refineries. We're still in the comment phase, and so all I have indicated back is that we're taking this letter in as part of the public comments, and indeed we're going to be then moving forward with a set of recommendations to you actually at the May 31st board meeting. So that's one thing, Mr. Chairman, I wanted to mention to you is that We think it makes sense to have a meeting on the 17th of May so that we can get our business done, and there's a lot of business to get done, but then hold the meeting that would be considering 1216 on May 31st. So that's 2 weeks later. We've begun the polling, and it does look like as many as 20, 21 of the board members can make it that day. And it just makes sense for us to have the meeting solely dedicated for that purpose. That way, because it's if history is any indication, you'll probably have 50, 60 people showing up, I'm sure, speaking to you about this. And it's going to be from community representatives as well as the industry. So that's kind of the plan moving forward, is that you will have a meeting on the 17th, but then 2 weeks later be hearing the proposed rule 1216. What that does is by moving it to the 31st, it does provide more time for the staff to respond to comments. The close of the comment period, I believe, is the 8th of May for the EIR and all the comments as it relates to 1216, 1118 as well. And we were already getting a lot of comments. So it just makes sense for us to make sure we're absolutely thorough, comprehensive in our responses, that we move the date off for your consideration to the 31st. And with that, Mr. Chairman, that represents my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Chairperson's report. The regular Board of Directors meeting scheduled on Wednesday, May 3rd has been canceled. The next regular Board of Directors meeting will be on Wednesday, May 17th. Special Board of Directors meeting dedicated solely to just what you heard will take place on May 31st. Congratulations to Supervisor Haggerty, who has departed on his reappointment by the Alameda County Board of Supervisors for a four-year term to the Air District Board of Directors. This is his fifth reappointment. Oh, so much excitement. Next time and place, the next meeting, Wednesday, May 17th, 2017 at 375 Beale. We are adjourned.